We've got limited time, and we'd like to have the opportunity for members to ask the next three questions. The purpose of the meeting for today is to get from the role players, Treasury, the Auditor General's Office, as well as from the two unions, their input on the SAPS budget. And it also provides members the opportunity to interact, to ask those questions that we believe are relevant before we, in preparation for ourselves, before we meet with SAPS management to discuss with them the budget. And we would also like to ask our guests to be open and frank with us about the challenges that you believe we are facing within this department. I know there are certain challenges that the Auditor General's Office have raised previously, and we would be interested in progress that has been made in that regard as well. So without further ado, can I ask National Treasury, Mr. Randela, I believe it is.
Thank you very much, Chair. With your permission, Chair, may I request that after taking the questions and answers, I move to another meeting. With your permission, I've got a COPA meeting.
Members happy with that?
No.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And thanks very much for the opportunity to interact with the committee. We welcome that. Without any waste of time, I will take you through the presentation. And the purpose of the present analysis of the Department of Police budget goals for the year 2011 up until 2012-13, as requested. And I will start by outlining the strategic priorities of the department over the medium term, which is firstly combating organized crime, combating serious and violent crime by between 47% in the target to be 77%, and combating crime against women and children. This is something to do with the vulnerable group. And lastly, improving service delivery to communities. Then the budget for the department grows from 32.6 billion in 2007 to 6.4 billion in 2013. And there are many cost drivers to that budget, which is largely personnel, infrastructure, and some capital equipment. Now coming down to budget growth per program. We find visible policing taking the largest proportion. Sorry, am I loud enough to talk
yeah.
The mic?
No, can you please use the mic? For the simple reason it's been recorded as well.
Okay, thank you. With visible policing taking the largest proportion, followed by administration, detective services, and lastly, crime intelligence. Visible policing over the last 4 years has grown faster than it will be growing over the medium term, mainly because there will be a shift in terms of utilization of the resources. More resources will be used towards detective services. And the next slide, it will be the budget growth per economic classification. The last slide was per program. Now it's by economic classification. With current payments taking the largest proportion, in there we find salaries, and also followed by capital payments, where we find, for instance, money for building of the police station, maintenance, and stuff like that, and money for capital equipment. And lastly, by transfers and subsidies, taking the smaller proportion. Then the 2010 MPF allocation for the police is as follows. We've got the baseline, which is from 50.9 to 57.8. And during the 2010 MPF, additional allocations were made to the department for additional policing personnel, for capacitation of the direct trade for privacy crime investigation, property management, and cost of living adjustment. And in there, we subtract the baseline efficiency savings. And we also added in the funds shifted from the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And then we have got the new baseline, which is in the next financial year, it's going to be 52.6 billion, growing to 60.4 billion. So this is the allocation as it stands at the moment for the Department of Police. Then looking specifically at the next financial year allocation in terms of percentages, the majority of that 52.6 billion goes towards the visible policing, which takes 38%, followed by administration 35% and detective services with 17%, and lastly by crime intelligence with 4%. The administration program, that's where we've got more of a centralized function. That's why it takes it's second to visible policy, things like property management, leases, and expenses like that. And then the in terms of the economic classification, the current payment takes almost 94% of the budget, followed by payment for capital assets, things like machinery and equipment, and buying for building and upgrading of police station, including maintenance, taking 5.3%. And then this slide focuses on personnel numbers per program. Overall, personnel growth from 163,000 in 2006-07 to 200,650 in 2012-13. One of the main observations there is that the light green line, detective services, it overtakes administration in the current year with regard to personnel. The main reason being the strengthening of the general detectives at police station and catering for the newly established unit, Directorate for Private Crime Investigation. So that's why now detective services, it begins to take over in terms of personnel. And again, if we link this slide to the previous slide when I indicated the budget allocation per program, and I indicated that the fastest growing program is detective services. So this is also reflected here in terms of personnel numbers per program. And then what you see there are some of the selected performance indicators. Those indicators, they are mainly on the detection rate, like detection rate for contact crime, which is projected to, in the current year, 54%, rising to 57% in 2012-13. And in there, we've got a detection rate for property-related crime, which is the lowest, ranging from 16% in 9-10 to 19%, which is the lowest of all the selected performance indicators. Then the question is, what needs to be done then to take those detection rates, relatively low detection rates, like 15%, to up it maybe to 100%, 90%? So that's the question that we need to ask ourselves. And we also have detection rate for crime dependent on police action for detection, which is the highest, ranging from 95% to 96%. You will remember from our last interaction, there was a slide which was showing the detection rate followed by cases referred to court, and then followed by the conviction rate, which was showing a decline. So I mean that also given these high percentages, meaning that as we move down the path, it's likely that some of these percentages are going to be lower. And that's the end of the presentation, and thank you.
Thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. My sincere apologies for coming at this time. In fact, I thought I was ill. Because I was in the understanding that the meeting started at 9:30. In fact, I said meeting to accommodate some members on Tuesday. She started at 9:30. So I just registered. I really must apologize for that. I didn't check the water paper. I just took it that the meeting started at 9:30. I really am sorry. I was in the office. I must apologize. But then we've had the presentation. I think it's National Treasury. According to the program, we are now to take questions from members if there are any. Ms. Chafer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to know with your administration budget, you said about administration, a lot of it is for maintenance and so on. I mean, our understanding is that most of the maintenance is done by the Fleetway Department, also known as Public Works. How much of that 35% is actually for maintenance, and how is that fitting in with the Public Works Department's mandate?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the slide that is showing Department of classification, the economical classification, there is a province and municipalities, which is 23 million. May I get an explanation? What is that? What is that 23 million for? I think we're talking about transfer, something of money, provinces and municipalities, 23 million. Can I get an explanation on that? Please.
Thank you. I can't quite see it here. I'm interested in how much money FIFA has given I don't know if it came in as a bulk amount or if it was divided up by our government or who, but I'm presuming there's a certain amount that's come in to boost security during the World Cup, and how much is the SAS ministry responsible for paying for that? How does the balance work? Or in fact, have they given anything towards policing for security during the World Cup? How is that budget working, and where is it reflected?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, question is on the lowering of targets, especially in the combating of serious and violent crimes, whether Treasury is comfortable with the lowering of targets, and if they are, why? I mean, why are they comfortable with it? And then the second question that I've got is in terms of the budget growth per program. I presume normally it is that, but I just want to double check that under admin all salaries are included. Is that correct? Or are you differentiating between the programs? So if you can just indicate to me now, then I can ask my question. Sorry? It's all salaries under admin?
No, each program will have its own
salary. Okay. Chairperson, and then the second question is simply in terms of Treasury's reading of the whole situation as well. In the past, I would say almost 7 to 8 years, if you look at the criminal justice budget as a whole, justice, correctional services, the whole cluster, the bulk of that budget went to SAS. Is there, and my concern is, and I can see there is a cut now, we can see the increase is becoming less. Is there a plan to also start giving to the other sections within the criminal justice system more money to catch up? My concern is, Jefferson, that SAS has received such a huge amount of the budget, which I don't have a problem with. And we've seen an increase in staff, etc. But can prosecutors cope with the workload? Because we haven't increased our prosecutors accordingly. We haven't strengthened our courts accordingly. Mm-hmm. We have got a backlog in terms of cases. Correctional services is sitting with the problem. So is there an effort from Treasury side to correct that almost skewed and imbalanced situation so that we can actually see that our police officers are not the only ones that are increased, but our prosecutors, our magistrates, etc., are also becoming more, and our facilities and correctional services can deal with this issue as well.
Any other questions? If there is not, as a matter of fact, I just wanted to actually check as to whether there is balance that for the review of the criminal justice in this building, because indeed we have an interest in police, but also we have Child Justice Act, mm-hmm. which will be implemented this year, and departments made submissions, I want to believe, including the police, even if there was no budget yesterday. But in the budget that you allocated, is it accommodated, the implementation of that act, which is the 1st of April this year? We requested the Department of Justice to give us an implementation plan, which is costed on this criminal law forensic procedures bill. We want to believe that surely the one other reason of increasing its budget talks to that. Are you aware? You can respond.
Okay, thank you. Starting with the first question on public works and maintenance. I think with effect from April 2006, there was a decision which was taken to devolve all the funding from DPW to all the departments so that DPW will do all the work and then they build the department. So all the money is now sitting with the department. So that's why all this money is for building and upgrading of police station maintenance is with the respective department, and then DPW they build the department.
Can you follow up on exactly this matter?
You know, I hear you saying this, and I want to say it sounds marvellous, but when we've just been to police stations who tell us that their foyer was too cramped for the community to even queue in the foyer of the police station, they had to go out to the community, raise their own money and build their own foyer because they could not get anything done by public works. It is a huge problem. As much money as you throw at it, as much money as public works has, public works just doesn't work. And every police station you go to says exactly the same thing. Or we just have to do it ourselves. We've got to go to private builders. They just don't do what we ask them to do. It's a huge concern everywhere we go. So, you know, it looks great on paper, but just a word of warning. It hasn't worked to date.
Just a follow-up on that. I recall that all members will bear me out on this. There was a division of some sort of a sum of money. If it's lower than half a million rand, then it can be done within the station.
Yeah.
Within the station. And when it's upper than that, then it can go to PWD. Is it that thing was just wiped off totally, or what has happened?
Okay, I think it's in a way up to a department to find innovative ways if they've got problems with the PWD. I'll give an example. Like justice, some of the projects are being done by IDT, which is a public entity under DPW. So they are using IGT for the construction of the ramps and all of that. But we note your concerns in terms of the whole problem of infrastructure investment using DPW. And then coming to the maintenance, regarding as well as part of the money can right be there, the maintenance, smaller maintenance, less than, I think, 5,000. So the department, they do that, but the bigger upgrading and maintenance is usually through DPW.
As far as the National Treasury is concerned, is that system working?
Yes.
When we engage Justice for them to use IDT, The reason why we supported them is because we also realized this backlog in terms of infrastructure investment. Also with regard to the police, there is a pilot project which gives the police the right to acquire land, do everything themselves, with the exception of the disposal of that particular asset. That rests with DPW. So the devolution of the custodial function, like the functional accommodation, the police station, the police will be doing that now themselves. That's under the devolution.
Yes, Jefferson, I think it is clear that at some point it's a follow-up suggestion almost that we will have to call DPW to this meeting.
Yeah.
Also to hear whether they're still satisfied with the agreement that they've got with SAP in terms of SAP doing their own thing. So this was a pilot project, as is correctly said. And from our own experience when we had the meeting in Pretoria, we are also doubtful about whether it's working because it's the first time that we ever hear that they've got a building section. So I really think we actually need to get DPW to check on this issue. And that there might still be an impression at station level that the problem is DPW, while the problem might be in SAP itself and in this unit. And I think we need to sort this out.
Coming on to the second question regarding transfer to provinces and municipalities. These are funds like your vehicle licenses, property rates, and the like that go to municipalities and to some provinces. So that's why we've got transfers to provinces.
Okay.
And how much FIFA budget for the World Cup? So it's a... Am I getting it right? How much money has been allocated for the World Cup?
I meant specifically to security
from FIFA.
From FIFA. Is there a section of the money that they've allocated that is specifically targeted to the Ministry of Police for our usage?
From FIFA?
Yes.
No, I'm not aware of any allocation. I'm not aware of any allocation from FIFA. I only know of any allocation which was given to staff for FIFA World Cup. State money. I'm not sure of any state money. I'm not sure as to whether FIFA they are coming to this party with any funding for security. I'm not aware of any allocation. And then lowering of targets. Are you referring to the last slide where we've got this selected performance indicator?
To you? No, I'm referring to the 4 to 7%.
Because if you check in the past, even SWAP themselves, they were struggling to meet those targets. Because even 4 to 7, I mean, generally, it's low. Generally, it's very low. I mean, you tell victims of crime that we're going to reduce it by between 4 to 7 or 7 to 10%. People will never be satisfied. They will never be happy, considering the violent nature of our crime. So I still believe that it's work in progress for SAP to up this target and the percentage in terms of by how much they would like to see this crime going down. But I need to add that we need to be honest to ourselves here. Fighting crime is our responsibility, all of us. I mean, the people who are committing this crime, like if we check at the detection rate for burglaries or housebreaking, 16% to 19%. I mean, these people, they're not out by this way. You know, we stay with these people. I mean, buying stolen goods, we're creating a market for those people, and we know people selling these things. So we can assist the police, you know, in that regard. So the point I'm trying to put here is that they themselves alone, they won't win this fight.
Chair, I understand the principle of responding to the question, but I don't understand the addendum to the answer, because when we are dealing with departments, we are dealing with people who are responsible, who are supposed to do their thing. Therefore, if Treasury says what they are saying to the police, then they are opening the window. And in fact, they are not opening the window, they are opening the door for the people just to walk out. We know the statement and so on, but if it's said by the Treasury itself, that means a lot more than it's said by anybody else.
In fact, we expect police to lead that community participation. We expect, indeed we agree, community participation is one other important aspect of fighting crime, but the department has to lead it. And that they are leading it and it is effective, we will see with this percentage increase. If it remains the same, it means community is not participating, they are not providing proper leadership. That's what we are saying. And yeah, I think you're correct, but I think maybe if you were saying it, not as person from Treasury.
No, what I'm saying, this is not the message that we put across to the police. Because even when we interrogated the target as put forward, we were not satisfied. We were not satisfied to say we would like this to be 100%. We will never be satisfied up until we see 100%. Like I indicated, that even with such low, even a 96% detection rate, we are not happy, because we know when we get to the stages of where cases need to be referred to court, it gets lower. And even when we talk about conviction, it gets even lower. So the message we tell the police every time when we talk about performance information is that we are not happy. We are not happy with what we are seeing. So this is not the point that we put across to the police. Yes. So we interrogate these targets that they put forward to say, I mean, what do you need to get to 100%? Okay. May I move on to the next question?
Can I follow up on that? But we need to know what they say to you to convince you that it's okay to bring it down. Why did you agree to the fact that they can bring this performance down?
Because they are saying that to be realistic, in the past years, they have been failing to meet the target of 7 to 10%.
Mm-hmm.
Just repeat what you
say. I'm saying is that for the past few years, they have been failing to get it right to 7 to 10%, and then they decided to revise it downwards. That was a decision taken by the police. It was a decision taken by the police.
I think for sure he cannot respond for police. This is not his target. It's the police's target. It's not National Treasury. So I think on that we need to understand. We are going to have the police appearing before the portfolio committee, and this is the question that must go to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you cannot really account for it. I don't think it would be fair for him to account for the 4 to 7%, and we can't change it yet.
Can I move on to the next question? For the past 7 to 8 years, the budget for the police can constitute a huge budget allocation. Okay. If you check with the, like for instance, with the NPA, every year we've got a problem of vacancy rate. They've got the money. Then their duty is just to advertise and appoint people. The last time it was in the region of 20-something%, the vacancy rate. And then pumping money into a department in trying to capacitate the prosecutors, whereas they are struggling with the current budget they have, you know, to employ more prosecutors. I mean, with the police, they've got a sub-complement of, I think, 174,000-185,000 with a vacancy rate of 5%. And again, with the National Prosecuting Authority, you are talking of 3,000 plus prosecutors with a vacancy rate of 20-something%. And yet, when we allocate money, we give, if we have to pump money, again into a department which is struggling. So it's also an issue, you know, with the prosecutor. And again, I should add that also the money that you see in the police budget and justice budget, there's also money allocated in there for the cluster. As a vehicle, because the money cannot flow outside a vote. It flows through a vote. So there is an allocation to the Department of Justice to cater for the needs of the cluster, and the money allocated to the police for the cluster. So the budget that you see in there, also part of it is for the whole cluster, for the benefit of the cluster.
No. Chairperson, I want my brother to elaborate on the cluster, because yesterday they told us that they don't need any money when they were presenting to justice about the cluster, which is your question that you just asked.
You mean for which cluster? Like for instance, the implementation of the Child Justice Act, it cuts across correctional services, social development, justice and PA. So that money is flowed through a vote. The money for the for the modernization of the criminal justice system, it has been given to SAP, so that the SAP IT system, top justice to DCS, that money has been given to SAP. That's the money that I'm referring to as money for the cluster.
Okay. Chairperson, when you look at the classification that time, to make it easier for us to follow what you're saying, looking at the pie, what percentage would you say is allocated for the cluster? If there are needs within the cluster, where do you think the police will take money from this pie? From the pie. If the police want to ship money in the cluster, what percentage and from which flight will they get money? Because I thought if there was money allocated for a cluster, then there would be, it would be clearly indicated.
You mean from the 10-11 budget vote 10-11 program classification?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that money is sitting under administration. Under administration.
Put your mic on, please.
That money is sitting under administration. And I think, if not mistaken, it's in the region of 300 something million that the money would start for the cluster. Over and above that, we've got money for the revamp of the criminal justice system, which in the previous MTF, I think it was almost close to $2 billion or $3 billion over 3 years. So that money is now in the baseline of the Department of Police. That's the money for the revamp of the criminal justice system. There was an allocation made in the 209 MTF.
If I may, while I hear what he's saying, these slices are in percentage.
Yes.
So my question was, what percentage?
No, it's a very small percentage.
What small?
I think it's in less than 1%, considering the budget for admin services, for administration. It's a very small percentage.
Yeah, that's the one.
I want two more. The other follow up on this one is, does Treasury require SAP to report on the same expenditure of these two amounts, the baseline amount and this amount, separately?
Yes.
Why don't we see it in their financial report? In SAP, I mean, I'm not asking you this.
Sorry, you didn't ask my question as to what percentage of the administration was for maintenance.
For maintenance. The total budget for the upgrade and building of police station is now in the region of, I think, 800 million. I'm not sure whether I've got the actual figures, but it's in that region of 800 million. That's for the upgrade and building an upgrade of police station. Can I move on, Chair? Budget for the review of the criminal justice system, I think I've already indicated that in the previous MTF there was an allocation made for the revamp of the criminal justice system. And coming to the money for the child justice, is there an allocation for this? Of all the departments in the JCPS cluster, only the Department of Justice came with a bid for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. none of these other departments came with a request.
I beg your pardon?
What I'm saying is, from the bid,
yes,
with the exception of justice,
yes,
the bid that we've seen for the implementation of the child justice,
yes,
is from the Department of Justice. And again, last year it was referred to as a cluster bid, but police, I think, didn't benefit from it. I think it was only for child development, 1.5 million given for child development. So the only allocation was for the implementation of legislation within justice, catering for this mainly three acts, for the catering for the needs of the vulnerable group. And
yeah,
you
want to make a follow-up?
Yeah, I'm just sorry, I'm a bit speechless. So you're saying that
put your mic on.
Obviously, a bit. Correctional services, nobody, not correctional services, not staff, no one else who actually deal with children on a regular basis, so they
need
budget to implement it.
In fact, yesterday we were told that they asked for 660 million.
Yeah.
And they were given the
13 million.
And of the department that submitted their request to National Treasury, SAPS did not. That is what we told the city. And in fact, we saw it. Now, I was just verifying with you whether maybe because it was like, even if they did not make the submission, but it will be accommodated in house. Now, I just wanted to check with the Treasury if it is aware of that in-house arrangement.
No.
So that we can probably, in this budget, be able to say this is the in-house arrangement. Because I think that legislation will impact directly on staff in terms of finances and everything.
Yes.
It could be that maybe they've got money in the baseline, these other departments. SAP, DCS, and social development, and with the exception of this justice, that's requested. Like I said, in the whole cluster, the only cluster bid that we've seen was from justice, and catering for justice, legal aid boards, and the NPA. So, and I know that they've got what they refer to as a development committee meeting, where they discuss all these issues cutting across the cluster, including the issue of funding certain legislation that are cutting across. Maybe it was discussed at that level to say maybe they are moving forward with a bit from that. I don't know what happened in that meeting. But this cluster bill, they discussed at that level of DEFCOM. So, but that before they submit to us, it has been endorsed by the development committee to seduce the cluster bill.
Let me be the last one on this one, Chairperson. I think Treasurer must understand why we're asking this question. Yesterday, the representative of SAPS said they don't need any budget. And it was asked, how much did you put in this 650 million for yourself? They said, no, they don't need anything. They will do it in-house.
For the children.
That's where the problem arises from the chairperson's questions. Because now, if they are discussing somewhere else, and then it comes to the cluster where most of the departments that are intertwined are working together, and one department, and especially the correctional service, and SAPS, with the core phase of the thing, has no budget for it. How that will happen? I'm not putting you in the spot, but I fail to understand now. Where are we?
Chairperson, yes. I mean, I think we're in the first year where Parliament's got a greater oversight over budget and impact on budget, etc. We're in a learning curve around this whole issue. But for me, it boils down to that there's fat within the budget. There's fat built into the budget. Because for that reason, I don't need a budget for the implementation of the Child Justice Act. And I've got a problem with that.
Sure.
I've got a serious problem that Treasury allows that fat be built into a budget. The question is, we don't know how much fat is built into this budget. We've got no clue how much fat is built into this budget. You know, it raises concerns. They set, subset yesterday, as members were saying, that they don't need money, but they need to do training, they need to publish documents.
Mm-hmm.
They are required, according to the Act, to have a separate vehicle transporting children and marked vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, either they're not going to comply with the implementation of the Act, or there is so much fat built into this budget that they can actually do so. And how do we determine it? And somewhere along the line, the Treasury and the Auditor General has got a responsibility to assist us in determining.
Exactly.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We're seeing that the SAT has the ability to suddenly pull out tens of millions of rand from somewhere. And we've always had the suspicion that visible policing was used as a slush fund. I know they sent a crew off to the Caribbean on a three-week experience previously, and they took the money from visible policing. And in fact, they came to us weeks after it happened and said, please approve this. And then it came out, it came from visible policing. Now, is this what's being allowed? Are they allowed to use the visible policing budget to pay suddenly for overseas trips, perhaps to pay for the implementation of this? And if so, then why are we pretending that we actually spend a huge amount on visible policing when in fact it's held back in order to pay for these little incidentals like parties in Bloemfontein? Where's the money come from? They still haven't answered that question. Tens of millions of rand. And I would have thought that the Treasury would have these answers.
The diversion.
In terms of the rule, it depends how much they are shifting. In terms of the environmental rule. So if they were within the prescripts of the law, the environmental rule, so they've got the power to themselves. You know, it's only maybe when it's specifically and exclusively earmarked funding where they come to Parliament. But if it's earmarked, they come to Treasury, then we'll look at their request. But if they've done the environment and they were within the prescripts of the rules, the environment rules, so they were within the prescripts of the law. So, but I don't know if the incident that you are referring to. And coming to the issue of the first in the budget, we did an exercise trying to look at the cash flows and the patterns of spending and things like that. If you check in the allocation, there's, in one of the slides, there's something that I refer to as efficiency savings cut, 177 million, I think, in the first year, then in the third year, 100 something. So that's the first that was identified, and that process is going on. In terms of the identification of fat, like things like we look at the pattern of cash flows, is it in line with their drawings, in which month do they spend their money, and all those spikes, you know, there's a lot of things that we are looking at. And again, maybe there's part of the reason that maybe they are able to do certain things, maybe they stop certain projects and cater for the agent ones, also in line with the environment rules to cater for the agent needs of that particular year.
Thank you very much. I think we began with Christian. We still have a few minutes if there is any other question.
Can I just, not so much, I don't know whether I'm directing the question to the right point. Environment is very specific in terms of the rules.
Mm-hmm.
And the percentage is, if I remember correctly,
8%.
Now, 8% of the ICD's budget and the program in the ICD is very little.
Mm.
But 8% of such visible policing budget is huge.
Monumental.
It's colossal. And shouldn't definitely at some point get to a point where that 8% is defined in terms of actual figures as well.
Yeah.
Where they, if they're going to go over a certain amount, not necessarily a percentage,
mm.
they need to come to Treasury if they were all going to have a environment.
Mm.
Because really, I mean, 8% of 1 million is nothing. 8% of 100 million is a hell of a lot of money. And I think at some point we need to get to, especially our big cost drivers like police,
mm-hmm.
to actually say that in your instance, because of the amounts involved, after a certain amount, we want you to come back to Treasury. We need the system to make sure that this budget is spent the way it's supposed to be spent.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the instruments that can actually assist us as Parliament to make sure that the money gets spent where it's supposed to be spent.
Yeah.
Do
you want to comment?
Just to make a comment, if I get your proposal, you are suggesting that we put a specific amount. So, meaning that each vote will have a specific amount that they are allowed not to exceed.
Yes.
So, meaning that we're going to have a rule of thumb, a fixed amount for each vote.
No.
Okay.
Not a rule of thumb. I think that's an unnecessary comment, quite frankly, Jay. Not a rule of thumb. You are the specialist. If you can, is the 8% a rule of thumb? If the 8% is a rule of thumb, then you go with the rule of thumb. But you are the specialist. Decide on that amount. And I don't even think it's got to be every single vote. I think we're talking about the votes where 8% of a program is really a huge amount. If we're talking about the big cost drivers. See, the fact of the matter is we've said it over and over, and we've said it to SAPS as well, and we are actually the committee supporting them. But we are developmental state. We need to spend on education. We need to spend on other issues. We're spending a huge amount, and we're bringing targets down. We're not meeting targets. And somewhere along the line, all of us, Treasury, this committee, the Auditor General, and we've got some serious questions for Auditor General's office as well. We need to stand together and say, okay, how do we assist this department to reach what they are supposed to be reaching? And I'm really not saying rule of thumb. I mean, I don't know how to determine that here. I'm not a financial specialist. But I just think that there is things in it to say 8% of 10 rand is one thing, but 8% of 1 million rand is another thing. And that surely Treasury can look at what, where are they comfortable? That amount should not go over a certain amount for the department to come to them.
Yes, Chair, I couldn't agree more. I think to have a percentage set aside for areas where the target is, where the total does not exceed a certain amount, and then say 8% or up to a limit of X. I mean, this is not. Difficult to work out, and the Treasury knows exactly how much would be really wasteful expenditure, and to allow expenditures of tens of millions of rand simply because it is taken out of visible policing, but is actually not approved by yourself, just gives them carte blanche to do the Caribbean trips, to do the parties. It's actually showing the stats up, and this shouldn't be happening. They are just crying need in stations around the country, and here we're seeing expenditure going elsewhere. It's just beyond unacceptable. So please, there's got to be a formula, some way you can work this out to ensure that when they have expenditure of tens of millions of rand, they have to come to you and say, are you going to approve it? And you have the right to say no.
We note your concerns and suggestions.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Lande. I think you are assisting us to prepare for the departmental position, because that is the tip of the together. That will sharpen our
yeah.
thinking and issues that will raise the department as a matter of fact. Not that we're holding you accountable for what SAPS is not doing well, but of course, we are also saying please assist us from the National Treasury.
Yeah.
Probably see these things also from our side, not as they come to you and say this thing, you know. And probably be able to pick up these trends and patterns, visible policing, but the man is not used for visible policing every time, used for something else. So there's something hidden in the program, it's not just visible policing. I think that is important. That's what we're asking from you. To say, please go deeper than what is on the face and the surface. Just go deeper and say this much and the trends and the patterns in the past. That's what we're asking from you. But thank you very much for your presentation. Really, we like I'm indicating, you are just sharpening our minds and preparing for the engagement with the department. Thank you very much. Our next presentation will be then from the Auditor General's office. We have just 5 minutes in between for them to organize themselves, and I think as they do that, we can just take a cup of tea, come and sit down. Those who have not had tea.
It's you, Chair. That you must have a couple.
That's for my
dear. And accessible for disabled people. This means free service room for questioning to my goals, to build that into actual goals. The ADL system to implement and to get in more auto vehicles. And there was also commitment in terms of response time after 1041 and certain minimum equipment that they need to enable them to respond. Then we also looked at other risk factors, and we looked at environment. So through environment for 2008-09, and there you can specifically see that there were two programs that I overspent. The one was on administration, and the other one was on defective services. And the amount that overspent for administration was 117 billion. Less than 1% of the total program. And then the reason for that was that they focused on training interventions and then spending more money and prioritizing information systems technology. For detective services, it was 71 million, which was a 1.1%, and it is related to the restructuring of the detective environment, and they require more resources, and obviously with the resources, there's more vehicles and equipment that they require. Just for visible policing, they were underspending by 0.6%, and there was that was a 99 million. And the reason there was prolonged tender processes. Now, for me, that is a risk again. If tender processes take long, police work on modified cash basis. So, those are payments if they discharge. So, if they don't get their tender processes approved, and the orders stayed within the year that it's budgeted, it will run over to the next year. So they need to look at their tender processes. They need to budget in line with the expected date that they will have the tender approved and then they will start paying the orders. And then crime intelligence and detection services, security will also under budget. We've then considered 2009-10 and going forward, and to specifically look at the expectations and the commitments made in the medium-term budget, the budget speech of 17 February, and also what was included in the State Information Agreement by the President. The medium-term budget specifically says that intensifying the fight against crime. So, throughout, this came through as one of the key priorities for the country, that they should be focused and that crime should be fight, and to make our community safer. if you look specifically at the commitment and in the state of the nation, that every person in the country feels safe. There was an indication of a 10% increase of employees in the number of policemen and women over the next 3 years. The fight against hijacking, business and house robberies to be addressed, as well as contact crimes such as murder and assault. Go to slide 9, one of the estimates on the EMU. So we look at the 09 or 10 budget, the revised estimate, and then considering the trends and the ratios for 2010-11, 2011-12. And we can see that for administration and visible policing, those two programs in general is about 70% of police total budget. Varying administration 33%, 34%, 35%, and then visible policing 41%, and going slightly down to 38% in 2011-12. With administration, as previously indicated, the buildings and the infrastructure is also included there. So with the commitment on upgrading police stations, building new police stations, the budget should be included in that portion, as well as the training commitment. And then on visible policing, making the sight of being there on the street, that's where we see the increase in personnel resources and then the increase there. Because if you consider if the percentage for the program compared to the total budget is 38.2% for the year 2011-12. And if you compare it over the 3 years, there's a slight reduction. There's a slight increase from 19 million, the revised estimate, moving to 20 million in 2011-2011, and then 21 million in 2011-12. So what I'm saying is, when we look at the program, there is an increase, which relates to the increase in police and increase in being visible on the street fighting crime, but in relation to the total police budget, there's a slight decrease. And then we have the other program that is detective services, that's moving from 15.8% to 17%, and then crime intelligence that is representing at 2%, and then the protection services security. That is 5% of the total budget. So I think from our side, if we look at the budget and from our risk, it is the commitment that I've made in terms of our report and the guidance that we want. We raised last year the concern in terms of the performance information and the fact that we couldn't verify the accuracy of the information, so we will have to implement a system and processes to make sure that we can. That they can collect the information and that we can verify the accuracy of that information. You've seen our analysis and the percentages as we spoke about it. Maybe just one last thing in terms of the total budget. There was the revised estimate for 2009-10 increased by 2.6%. There's an additional increase of 10% in 2010-11, and then 8.3%. And maybe just the question in terms of if there's a 10% increase in establishment, was that incorporated in terms of salaries, the payments, the resources that they will require to execute their work?
That is all. Waiting for the questions is something very great. Okay. Now, thank you very much for the presentation. We will now be taking questions from members. Honorable analyst.
Chairperson, yes, I'm interested in the performance system problems that you had with it. Can you maybe just explain to us exactly what the problem there is so that we also have a better understanding of the challenge there? And I know that you've been working with them to try and correct that as well. And are you feeling that positive that they actually would have corrected the shortcomings there? Then second question that I have, Chairperson, is in regard to tenders. The committee itself has raised issues about the tender process of that and about concerns on the tender process. You raised a specific issue about the time period that's involved. Our concern is more about the fact that SAPs are determining the minimum standards. The unit that needs the tender determines they sit on the committee that decides, and they are also on the appeal committee. So I'm putting it very simplistically, I think that was more or less what our concern was. There's not a division, there's not a segregation, there's no independence actually in the final granting of the tender. Can we just get a feeling about, what your feeling around that is? And then I also know that the minister has made a public statement that he's putting together a team to have a look at specifically around forensics, around what is happening there in terms of tender, in terms of output, etc. Is the Auditor General's office satisfied that we don't have reason to be concerned about tenders in the SAP?
Thank you, Chairperson. And slide number 9, I'm curious to understand the percentage on detective service and crime intelligence. It seems as if there is only one figure that has been put for budget 09-10, but there's nothing. But on the others, on top of it, visible to any administration, there are percentages that are put there. Is there any reasons why is so? Because maybe I will understand. It's the same thing as the protection and security services. why is there a difference on that, on those two? Thank you.
The Honourable Wankel says you say there's money for upgrading of the buildings, but I mean the problems with the call centre aren't generally building related. They're related to the people answering the phone calls and the response by the captain. So I mean, are you regarding that as satisfactory compliance with improving the service? And then there's no mention at all of the FTS unit, which we were promised by the minister over a year ago, which we're going to reintroduce.
I've set a register with reference to forensic laboratory specifically. Is it possible that as you do your audit, you can pick up a machine that probably is dismantled and parts used to repair another machine? Is it possible? But also, is it possible to pick up a machine that was purchased and is not there as you do the auditing? Is it possible? And if not, why not? If yes, how? I'm asking that question.
Thank you. If I can start with the first question on the performance information and the challenges that we have there.
in the approach that we followed, remember we're busy with the faith in the approach and we're honest in the process of expressing an opinion, so it's not 100% family. Last year we did consider and we did focus on the CAD system, one of the programs that we audited. I think the problem was more, the problem was more in terms of the capturing of the information, how they capture it, and designing their off. If there were backlogs, and the classification of cases is a challenge. So it was more in terms of how the information goes in, and then for us to, at the end of the day, take that, what is in the system, and take it back to a source document to get that link. We did this here, we are getting our IT components in, and basically we're going to focus and see what specific control weaknesses are within the system. So then we will be in a better position to report on the system itself. Yes, we raised the concern that we're not working with police to collect the areas of concern. Treasury was much more involved, helping them, making sure that the objectives are measurable, that they do report, that they get the information. We just started with our interim audit at the police station, and that is actually where we will follow up on the performance information. So at this stage, I can't say if there is an improvement. I don't know if we need more detail, but I think it's too soon for us to say yes, there is an improvement, or no, we still face the same challenges as what we had last year. In the tender process, I must agree, yes, there is problems in terms of the tender process. If you look at last year's financial statement, there was an amount of, if I remember correctly, it's about 19 million irregular expenditure. I don't know if you've got it, but it's around about there was a significant amount of irregular expenditure that was reported in the financial statement. That is just an indication that they didn't follow process and that they been disclosed as irregular, and now they need to follow a process to condone the expenditure and to regularize that expenditure. We didn't include it in our report, or when they disclosed it, it's not necessary for us to include it in our report. So there is problems in terms of the tender process. We're also currently busy with, based on a request from the National Commissioner, we are now busy with the investigation on specific tender processes and specific tender sector issues. So we just started with that process as well. Then the percentages, I think, I included the administration and visible policing because that is 70% of the total budget, and the rest are fairly small in comparison to that. I just worked it out, and protection and security service is an average of 5.6, 5.7 throughout the years. Crime intelligence, if I could just quickly get to that. Crime intelligence was 3.5, 3.59, 3.54. So it's also consistently the same percentage. And detection services was 15.8, then it's 16.4, 15.8, 16.6, and 17%. So it's also consistently 16-17% of the total budget. So there's not a specific, the reason why I left it out is because the focus is on the first two, and the majority of the budget sits within administration and visible policing. And then when I think about the 1-0-1-1 report, that is what the report is called, is the 1-0-1-1 performance audit report. But included in that report was various focus areas. We focused on bulletproof vests that wasn't issued at the time, bulletproof vests that wasn't made specifically for the women in the pool. Mm-hmm. We've also addressed the call center and the response time, and that is where the commitment was to say that they need certain minimum equipment for the call center. We also looked at the community services, and there was a commitment for the upgrading, the accessibility for disabled people, building the ramps, and then building new police stations. That is where they made the commitment. So yes, although we call it the 1-0-1-1, it covers other aspects as well. I don't know if that adequately answers on that question. And then the forensic laboratory, I'm not sure who that you want to do. If I can just understand the question, so specifically in terms of the equipment that they use in the laboratory, and whether we can verify those, and if it's possible for us to see if they use parts for other machines.
If there is any machine that is missing, if there is the machine that has been in boxes for years and years, purchased and not used, something like that, is it possible for the audit team to pick up those things and raise them as issues of serious concern? I'm just asking, as part of asset register.
I was just thinking, as part of the normal asset verification process, that is typically what we would have done and should do, if I just consider the cost to be material, so that possibly that those are in the sample. I just don't know at this stage. You don't know when we're going to visit the laboratory. So they just indicated that we're only going to visit because with the year end, we usually do the asset verification at year end, March, April, and then we'll also specifically visit the laboratories. And maybe perhaps if we can give you feedback after that, you see, you know, what was the exact findings.
I just want to ask a strange question. I mean, is there any possibility of you auditing the forensic laboratories as far as exhibits are concerned, that the records of the exhibits are properly maintained? Because we've just recently found that there's things disappearing and police clearly aren't interested in solving the problem in-house. I mean, is that possible for auditors general to do?
That will particularly form part of our performance information as we move and covering all the programs and expressing opinion on that. That is part of their performance. So moving forward, just to clarify, if that is part of the predetermined objective.
What?
Remember, when we look at performance information, the process that we follow is that the department must have an approved strategic plan. The plan includes predetermined objectives, measurable objectives. And that is what we report on. Do the department consistently report on those predetermined objectives? And if that is included as a predetermined objective, the actual result, say for instance, there's a turnaround time of, I don't know what the measure will be, or doing a 70%, and they report on a 60%, we will work from the source documentation to verify the accuracy of the 60%.
So there's no way, I mean, if the staff doesn't make that one of their priorities, there's no way we can force them to do it. So if they don't please themselves, we can't please them.
We can.
Only as a portfolio.
Okay. Thank you. Chairperson, yeah, I think it basically boils down to us being more vigilant when we look at the strategic plan for the next 5 years and to see whether we actually agree with the performance measurements of it, but you know, whether we believe that it covers those areas that we want to cover. I mean, I think we just need to be more assertive and involved in that process. On the issue of the forensic laboratories, the issue is also that it's an extremely specialized environment. So, I mean, they can basically tell you anything and you will have to believe them unless you are a specialist yourself in that area. Are you, when you do the laboratories, do you take somebody that knows something about the environment, or would you consider, if we request you to do so, to take an outside? I know CSIR, for instance, have a forensic section themselves. Maybe take somebody from that department to go with and to have a look at what they say and to verify that.
Particularly when you think of your performance audit center. Because indeed, you know, those forensic laboratories, they are keeping drugs worth billions of money. You can actually be rich overnight. I'm saying that it's quite tempting. And the control measures that must be in place, that those drugs are disposed properly. For me, that should be their performance I mean that it should form part of their target performance, whatever. Otherwise, you're confiscating drugs out there to the laboratory and from laboratory back to the streets, and that is possible. And as a matter of fact, we think that that should be one of the important indicators, the performance. You have diamonds there, you have gold, you have these rhino horns.
Mm-hmm.
All these things, they are huge sums of money. In fact, I can buy you today if I could just access them. And how we deal with this, how we dispose them, is very crucial to the portfolio committee. But particularly after visiting the forensic laboratory, you know, really we think something more should be done in order for all of us to be happy that they don't leave the laboratory back to the streets again. And I'm just emphasizing it so that maybe you see it even from our side of the story here. But sure. Also the machine, let me again emphasize this. It's very true, when you go to forensic laboratory, you are overwhelmed by all these things, these DNA things, these specimens, these analysis and so on. If you're not that oriented, you can miss out on many things, very critical information. And I will agree with Honorable Annelies that sometimes you need somebody not only who is an auditor, but also with information on how the laboratory should run. Otherwise, you see people talking inside, you ask, but why are these people talking and not working? You're told, no, they are just, what is it? They're analyzing. When literally they're talking, and you must believe that they are not talking, they're analyzing. And later on you learn that, no, they were told that, no, they were talking. Why didn't you behave properly when Parliament was there? You pick up these things, and you're just told anything, and you must believe it, because you're not that. You know, I just want to say that we do have some serious concerns with our laboratory. I think that I won't want to say some of the things here, but I think we really have concerns.
Thank you. I'm sorry, Chairperson. Please, I beg your pardon about the tender. I want you to understand. There is a tender that goes out in 2009-2010, but it's paid in 2011-2012. And I want you to take me step by step now. Why is that? Why is that process? Why it's late? And in the meantime, what is happening between the tender that has been approved and the payment thereof? Because that gap, that 6 month gap or that 1 year gap, to me, it means a lot, and so on and so forth. I'm sorry, maybe I missed it. I know that analyst asked it, honorable analyst asked the question, but I didn't get it. I just want to get the time lapse in between. Thanks,
do you hear a political speech? The 6 months, a year, for me it means a lot. Now you just decide as to what that means, but a lot.
Chairperson, on the issue of tender also, I was told that there was 90 million of irregular expenditure. That was discovered.
The reference that I made was in terms of the environment and the request for environment. The specific reason was under visible policing. So under visible policing, there was a 99 million rand underspent, and the reason for the underspent was that there was a prolonged tender process. So they didn't use the money that they anticipated to use. When we look at the pro process. A tender process is a fairly long process. They need to determine the specification. They need to invite tenders. In they need to provide 3 weeks, a month's time for tenders to submit their tenders. Then there's the evaluation process to determine which of these parties that tenders is the best person or the best company to do that. And only when all these processes are completed, then they will sign a contract. And once the contract is signed, the company or the service provider can only start delivering the service. So if that process from inviting tenders until finalizing the contract before they can start takes too long, it will impact on service delivery, on when they receive the goods, and it will then impact on when the department will start paying. And if the department budgeted in this year, but the provider only delivers next year, I mean the budget was in this year, and as a result they will underspend on this year's budget. So for me, the risk is in terms of the budget is, if we budget for something this year and it doesn't happen, money that the department don't use must be surrendered back to the treasury. If there's not a formal commitment already.
Okay.
So then it has to be surrendered. Alternatively, they must ask for those funds to be rolled over to the next year.
Right.
It can also mean that for next year they've been budget, they didn't budget adequate because there's now more expenditure in next year than in this year now. Because of payment for and service starting rate. So that is the process. I sent investigation. There was a request that we look at specific tenders and the process. We do it as part of our regularity, and the lady, we only started her on Monday. So she will only start now to work through the documentation. We did give her, I think, 200 hours that we initially, so it's almost 3 months that she is going to look at specific tenders that were identified. So it's part of regularities, we will then include, if there's any irregularities, and the department on this process, we will include it in our report, and I'm sure if necessary we can discuss the outcome of our findings with the committee.
The issue of the loss of firearms. There's been an issue that's been coming up in the general support for a couple of years. Are you satisfied that that now got, I think last year it wasn't part of it. Are you satisfied that they're now dealing with it appropriately?
With the performance information, what's happening this year is we are specifically looking at indicators that are having the highest risk. And I know with the firearms risk will be one of our highest risks. So for this year, we will identify that indicator and then we'll be for this year.
In the absence of fair questions, I want to thank you very much once more for your presentation and the information that you've shared with us. Thank you very, very much. We are on time in this. We also have a comrade from SOPCO and SAFU. Remember. I'm sorry. They will be presenting to us. I'm not sure whether they have one presentation or one presentation. Two presentations. Thank you very much. We are going to take a POPCO presentation first, then SAFU, and then we're going to ask questions. POPCO. And I think it is also important that I welcome you, but also thank you for always being available to input on our budget as unions, in the Department of Police and they value your input. Over to you.
Thanks, Chairperson Bina Mudin Sam. Siabong Bell. To be part of this August.
No comment.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, Portfolio Committee, in the absence of South African Police Service Management, leadership, organized labor, we present our revolutionary greetings. Proper appreciate the opportunity given so that we can raise our views and opinions around the department's strategic plan and budget goals 22, 2010, 11. We take it that this invites a reflection that populists recognize as an important stakeholder in the advancement of the strategic imperatives of the department. It further encourages our continued relationship with the labor movement operating within the department. This invitation was met without hesitation, but with gratitude. To elucidate on our understanding of our duty as a top group, we are not only responsible and accountable to our members, but also to society at large. Thus, it's incumbent that in our submission we do not pull out the department and its performance only, but also ascertain that our members who are employed by the department are indeed fulfilling their duty to ensure that the mandate bestowed to them is fulfilled. Honorable Chairperson, it needs to be noted that the processes of this nature must not be used as a formality. Input and concerns that are raised by the 2010-11 budget votes must be treated with the degree of respect that is deserved. We shall not be here to read a situation whereby we raise the same issues over and over again without seeing any positive change on areas where change is required. On that note, Chairperson, the first thing I would like to do is to register on behalf of the great majority of our people sincere appreciation to the members of the South African Police Service of the sterling work they do to create conditions that are prerequisite to make our country safe and secure. This acknowledgement is appropriate given our full understanding of the difficulties that attend the mandate to the men and women in blue. Our police officers place their lives in harm's way as they undertake their duty of confronting the scourge of crime within the center of the South African population. Many have paid the ultimate price, though, with their lives and have perished in the line of duty. We must honor these unsung heroes and heroines with an unwavering commitment to intensify the fight against crime. At an occasion such as this one, perhaps one should start from the beginning, as we do. More than 20 years ago, some of the Rivonia tribes, amongst them Walter Sulu, Elias Mutswale, Raymond Nhlaba, and others, were released from prison and were followed by the wealth icon Madiba, whom his release was celebrated countrywide on the 11th of February 2010. These heroes have been incarcerated for upholding and fighting for the achievement of a society based on the democratic values as enshrined in the Freedom Charter. Their crime has been to assert that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, black and white, and that no government can justly claim authority unless based on the will of the people. That beacon of hope, the Freedom Charter, still remains one of the most famous documents in the history of the freedom struggle. The aspirations contained therein, including peace, security, and comfort, define the tasks that we must accomplish. The preamble of the Constitution, whom everybody claims to be very good. We have the proper statement that South Africa belongs to all who live in it. It further binds us to work to improve the quality of life of all citizens and free the potential of each person. It's a well-known fact, Chairperson, that on its ascension to power, the government of national unity inherited a society marked by deep social and economic inequalities, as well as by serious racial, political, and social divisions. To fill that role, to effectively the service, South African police service, for that matter included, needed to be transformed into a coherent, representative, competent, and democratic instrument for implementing government policies and meeting the needs of all South Africans. In moving towards its vision of a public service which is representative, transparent, efficient, effective, accountable, and responsive to the all to the needs of all, the government identified 8 priority areas for the transformation agenda, which is rationalization and restructuring to ensure a unified, integrated public service, institution building and management to promote greater credibility and organizational and managerial effectiveness, representativeness and affirmative action, transforming service delivery to meet basic needs and redress past imbalances, the democratization of the state, human resource development, employment conditions and labor relations. The promotion of professional service leaders. These transformation areas were priority areas in 1994, and it is our contention that they are the priority areas today in 2010. We should not be comfortable with them accumulating dust in the government archive. These areas should get a share from the budget which we are engaging in. Honourable Chair, allow me to further streamline the areas that need attention from the budget. At the same time, we'd like to acknowledge strides taken by the department in improving service delivery. The aspects are as follows. 1, organizational structure. We have indicated to this committee in the past, and we are doing it here today, that the South African Police Service organizational structure is top-heavy. We have previously demonstrated in terms of monetary terms what this structure costs to the taxpayer's money while impeding service delivery. We shall not rest on or abandon this input until we are taken seriously this aspect is attended to. A flatter organizational structure is required rather than the many layers of command and control currently existing for better service delivery to the South African. Restructuring of the organizational structure is necessary as a way forward to better policing and improved services, using the local police stations as the crucible of such services. A revised structure should incorporate the advantages of decentralization of work and authority, along with specialized skills that will be available at station level, not what has happened in the past 2 years, which was wasted taxpayers' money or resources under the pretext of restructuring. The focus of restructuring is directed towards reducing the provincial and national structures to improve coordination and the provision of functional policy and the support services. Redeployment to station level at certain specialized operational policing functions will ensure that crimes are investigated where they occur. Moving of skilled or specializing personnel to stations will increase the leadership, management, decision making, and skill levels of stations to deal with the station's unique crime challenges. Empower station commissioners to render a comprehensive service and effectively manage all resources and amend accountability framework, effectively assess the performance of station commissioners in terms of the standardized performance indicators. The management, monitoring, and evaluation of the police station are the key to success in combating crime. As we stated in the past, the staff head office should be regarded as the policy-making body And a policy-making body does not require a bloated structure that we currently have, because its role is merely to consume a bigger chunk of the budget allocated to the department. More needs to be done to ensure that the improved portion of the budget is removed from that level and be allocated to the station level, where actual activities take place at the overstretched resource. Action from the community. Honorable Chairperson, as we put these priorities before yourself, it's worth to remember that in 2004, the government set the target of reducing crime by 7 to 10% per annum, which is a bone of contention today. It's internationally recognized that crime prevention is not solely a criminal justice issue. Crime prevention is most likely to succeed when it's settled by a range of role players, including government departments such as health, education, social development, local government, NGOs, business sector, and the public at large. Population organizations operating within the safety and security environment need, as a matter of urgency, the strengthening management and appropriate funding of the community policing forum. Community safety forums must monitor and coordinate the functioning of the criminal justice system at all levels. That is, monitoring mechanism system should start from the inception of the case, when it's reported, preliminary investigation of the case, visiting the crime scene, identification of physical evidence and witness that need to be interviewed. The expert called on the crime scene to identify some exhibits like fingerprints, prints, and so on, for DNA testing. After everything has been recorded in the docket, its movement should be monitored, and that should be recorded in the database, and the station commissioner should monitor progress and the quality of the docket statement inside the docket and the possibility of prosecution in the court of law. There should be a smooth handing over of work from the police, justice, and corrections without any blockage. The system of monitoring the cases will lead to the police, the court, and the prosecutors concluding the cases within a required period without any hassles or delays. Not the privatization of services touched by the forensic science laboratory that was envisaged with the provision embodied within the Criminal Law Amendment Bill in 2008. A quality management system should be introduced and adopted by all departments within the criminal justice cluster to ensure that the turnaround time in terms of the whole cycle of prosecution, including examination by the forensic science laboratory, is up to the acceptable standards. The success of policing is also reliant on active community participation, which gives effect to sector policing. The effectiveness of the sector policing, which is to ensure closer cooperation and integration with the community, entails a resource-intensive exercise and the establishment of local partnerships. Therefore, redeployment of experienced and senior police officials at the level of sector policing and police stations is of paramount importance. The involvement of South African youth in a massive program of community policing and safety must be implemented and certainly be paid by government as part of the National Youth Service, to instill the value of service and protect the community and public property. Youth must be mobilized and organized into a mass-based community program to assist in visible policing and safety and security. Therefore, a reasonable portion of budget should be allocated to youth development and training in policing, safety and security. Training and development, Chairperson, it's our view that the leadership of staff must ensure that sufficient funds are invested in the field of training and development of officers at all levels, including managerial level. We need to have sufficiently skilled and properly trained officials to be entrusted with the responsibility of making sure that those who are in conflict with the law are taken care of within the relevant prison. The police, whose function is to create conditions for safety and security, are expected by government to be effective service in which all citizens can have the fullest confidence. For this to happen, the police must be well trained and competent, and work well with the members of the community, as they said. In other words, they have to define themselves into the progressive programs of the people by word and deed. While we acknowledge the remarkably significant progress that has been made in relation to transformation issues, we strongly feel that the budget proposal that has to be rather more vocal in terms of the principles that guide the transformation agenda, as we alluded to earlier on. A transformed South African police service will be judged by one criterion, above all, its effectiveness in delivering services, which means the basic needs of all citizens in terms of safety and security. The FIFA World Cup, Honorable Chair, 2010 FIFA World Cup is one of the biggest infrastructure investment projects in our country. Government is using its investment in the World Cup to speed up growth and development in the country so that it leaves behind legacy that will benefit generations of South Africans to come. During this event, attention must increasingly be focused on the pervasive crimes expected to accompany the boom in the South African tourism industry, which is human trafficking and drug smuggling. This kind of crime will be rife at this juncture, as perpetrators of this nature of crime will be looking at making lucrative profit. It's for this reason that there is paramount importance for the increase in the police presence during the World Cup in order to tender a targeted environment too risky for traffickers to function as they wish. The critical question that everyone would ask is whether, as well as stakeholders within the justice framework, we are pulling to the same direction in order to provide safety and security during this major event. Mm-hmm. Chairperson, as part of an effort to implement a coherent and focused program in fighting crime, we must unapologetically commit ourselves to the unwavering implementation of the constitutional provision. The restructuring process should be looking at this broad and strategic initiative, which is the process of placing municipal police, municipal, metro and traffic police under the command and control of the National Commissioner of the South African Police Service. And this is a force of multiplying. Section 199 of the Constitution, RSA Constitution, mandates for the establishment of single police service to combat, prevent and investigate crime, to maintain public order and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property. Therefore, implementation of this resolution is of crucial importance. Hence, we say this is a constitutional imperative. The term criminal justice system assumes that justice is to be regarded as and judged as a system, not the current accidental assemblage of disparate and disconnected elements with varied historical origins. Indeed, it should be a system. But we say in conclusion, as POPCO, we believe that employees as stakeholders are the vehicles in achieving great objectives of any department. Therefore, it's crucial that they be regarded and treated as such. We further rally behind the spirit of extensive consultation in as far as such processes are concerned. Fight against crime is part of the integral approach in the effort to accomplish the goals of a better life for all. And improving quality of life also means better and improving conditions of safety and security of the people in their homes, communities, and the place of work. Moving for the adoption of a sound budget proposal is not and will not be enough. Let us ensure that there is proper adherence to the set budget. Let all of us hang our heads in shame each time the record financial records make us hang our heads in shame each time the Auditor General speaks. We rest assured that as an organization, we shall throw our weight behind all the responsible actions of the department, but shall never hesitate to raise our curl each time there are deviations from the budget that has been tabled and adopted. Together we can do more in ensuring a safer and peaceful South Africa. And may I say in conclusion, and lastly, Chairperson, that our members indeed enjoyed the party and the celebration in Bloemfontein, and they would like to have a repeat of such to celebrate to reduce their stress level. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the presentation from Popco. I'm not sure whether Sap is here. Okay, we are going to take a presentation then questions.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Portfolio Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, members of Parliament, of the Labour Union, ladies and gentlemen. It is with great pleasure and privilege that we take this opportunity on behalf of the members of the South African Police Union, take opportunity and then submit our input to this 24th budget vote. Every year we look forward to this opportunity that is offered to us. This year, our leadership had to meet and discuss, as raised previously by the our sister unions here, that our members, when we mentioned that we are coming here, raising issues, they have got aspirations. So we have to seriously think, look at the issues that we've raised before and that remain outstanding. Our submissions are always based on the inputs and consultations with close to 70,000 members that we represent. Honorable Chairperson, let me also express our gratitude for involving Labour in discussions where issues affecting our members are discussed. While we are very grateful for that, would like to be assured by the Chairperson that invitations to make contributions are not simply for the political expediency, but are taken seriously. As I've mentioned before, that our convention places its hope in this committee to hear the cries of our members and to intervene when necessary. We believe that the committee has experience and power to make difference in the SAPS. Let me also state from the onset that our understanding of us being here is to contribute to the budget speech of the minister, which is due in a couple of days. We are therefore attending to this occasion to lobby and mobilize the opinion of all the role players on the issues that we are raising, which have budgetary implications. As union leaders, we have to play our role and use every relevant platform to advance the aspirations of our members. Policing continues to be under intense spotlight, and our members are under tremendous pressure to deliver, and in many ways are delivering under very difficult conditions. While we certainly take some of the issues we are raising here in the governing chamber, we are convinced that this is also a right platform to raise them again. Honorable Chairperson, in his state of the address this year, we were encouraged that the President once again placed firmly on the national agenda the issue of dealing with violent crime and crime in general. Our position in addressing crime is not solely based on the fact that South Africa will be hosting the Soccer World Cup, particularly. Ours is based on the cries by many South Africans whose quality of life has been severely disrupted by high crime levels. Our position is that the crime situation requires more sustained approach to ensure that South Africans can live in peace, harmony, before, during, and after the World Cup. The following are some of the critical issues that we'd like to flag for this committee to seriously consider. Last year, we expressed our frustration for not being able to make a meaningful contribution to the budget vote process because we have not been given enough time to consider the issues raised. Budgets are complex, documents will require time and consultation with experts as well as members. We are of the view that in order for us to use this space that has been made available to us, we request to be privy to the content of the budget on time so that we can apply our minds and use this space meaningfully. This is even critical because we even believe that the budget could have been well spent to deliver on key mandates of the SAPS. Our view is that until more of the budget is spent in ensuring that police officers are well trained, well resourced, and motivated to provide quality services, we will fail to deal with the high crime level. Nevertheless, we would like to make the following contribution to the budget vote. The issue of the public service employees. Honorable Chairperson, this has been raised before in this committee. In the police, we've got two types of employment for people working in the SAPS. On one hand, you have the personnel that are employed in terms of the Police Act, that are functional members, uniform members, and the other hand, people employed in terms of the Public Service and Administration Act. These people are employed differently, have different benefits, and are subjected to different aspects of law, yet they are working side by side with each other every day. We think the situation is unattainable and often results in ambiguities which complicate relationships. We'd like to lobby the Portfolio Committee to consider re-employing the civil servants in sub under the same or under the Police Act. With the recent case of our sister union here, Bokpro versus SAPS in 2008 in High Court, one of the High Courts of the land, it was ruled that Public Service Act personnel are indeed employees and in terms of Labor Relations Act as such are entitled to strike. This nullifies the purpose of SAPS being an essential service where you still have the possibility where almost half of your workforce and backbone of the support to functional members can go on strike, and that can paralyze SAPS and as such policing in South Africa. To us, this can only lead to anarchy. Therefore, Honorable Chairperson, translation from the Public Service Administration Act will clearly address this problem and stop the situation amongst workers on the same shop floor. Reservist in the context of SAPS has always been a need-based requirement. A voluntary service in your suburb of residence to enhance service delivery of SAPS to fight crime. This was performed by permanently employed citizens who utilized their 9 employed hours, evening, weekends, vacation leave to boost up crime fighting. The recent strike action by reservists and the marches that we've seen all over, many of whom are led to be unemployed, is a stark indicator that terms of utilizing voluntary workers as reservists in SAPS have created a dilemma. The utilization of unemployed youth is akin to scape labor without pay and a social injustice. As an organization, SAPU demands that urgency is applied to find solutions to the unemployment and poverty. It is our duty to protect the needy and the uniform who have no food, shelter, or clothing. But given a uniform as a voluntary worker and expected to perform unselfish loyalty, it's a problem, Madam Chairperson. We cannot escape the social injustice that is taking place by the misuse of these children. Let's look forward and outward together. Together we can make the difference. Intensifying the fight against crime, there is no doubt that every South African, visitor and international community would like to see our government intensify efforts to address the high levels of crime. As a result, crime has grown to become the largest single police organization in the world. Despite the growth of SARS in terms of numbers, there's been growth of private security industry in South Africa. that we have seen competing with SAPS. Even foreigners are setting up security companies within, because there is a perception that SAS is unable to provide protection to foreigners living in South Africa. SAS is concerned that the high rate the high crime rate is producing other dynamics, which, if not kept soon, will be a receipt to disaster in the fight against crime. We are convinced in the main these are vigilante groups squandering as security companies. There is an indication that some communities are losing faith in the police. We've seen, we've heard of a case in where a manager displayed this by advising a complainant in Littleton police station to refer a docket to a private investigator. The South African Police Union would also like to raise a serious concern about violent crime in South Africa. In as much as police statistics indicate that murder has stabilized, our view is that it has stabilized at a very high rate. It's still very high. Our view is that some of the crimes are committed with military precision, which suggests that these are not ordinary people. Many people have asked for evidence for this, and we think that the absence of concrete evidence does not in itself suggest absence of foreign and trained elements in violent crime. Our evidence, though, is that the many former soldiers in Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Lesotho, Democratic Republic of Congo, Angola, and others who have deserted their countries are in South Africa poses a serious risk for the security of our country. While many of former soldiers from other African countries have been absorbed by the private security and others, others have opened own private security companies and recruiting soldiers from their country. Then unsuspecting citizenry, which is also terrified by high crime levels, will use whatever service available to ensure their safety. Our view is that strengthening the capacity of our police intelligence is critical to address this chaos in the security which is needed. Border control. We would welcome the deployment of police to control our border post or post of entry. We also welcome the proposed redeployment of military to secure our border line. We believe that is consistent with our constitutional provision for military and the police to perform these separate yet complementary roles. While we welcome the deployment of our police students to the border to gain practical experience, we hope that it does not suggest that this is less critical deployment. Our borders are perilous and require tight security to secure them. While we are certain that most crimes in South Africa are committed by our people, we are certain that there is growing foreign element which complicates our crime situation. While we welcome foreigners in our country, we don't believe that tighter control needs to be in place to ensure that those that come to South Africa are legitimate visitors. We are quite concerned about what our beautiful country has become. We get a sense of foreigners in our country where there's the so-called xenophobic attacks, and wonder how those people entered our country and start building informal settlements. We are raising these issues because when they become a problem, it is our members who have to deal with them. A restructuring of the SAPS. SAPS will once again be spending millions and restricting of police services to accommodate the new rank system. While we welcome the new rank system, we are concerned that this could be another area of discomfort and contestation between unions and police management. In our submission last year to this committee, we expressed the same view, which we would like to reiterate, that the constant restructuring in SAPS often leads to instability and unhappiness amongst our members. As a result of anxiety and fears that often accompanies this restructuring, our very dedicated members are often distracted by the restructuring processes. While our members join the police with the full knowledge that they can be deployed anywhere their services are required within the Republic, we are concerned that when our members are constantly reshuffled, in many instances, it results in loss of stability and promotion. Promotion. The lack of promotion and upward mobility in the police is an area of discomfort for our members. In many instances, hardworking, dedicated, and deserving members are ignored, which becomes a source of low morale for our members. In particular, the promotion from the rank of inspectors to captain seems very difficult, and this often results in members leaving the SAPS to other government institutions and come back and occupy senior positions in the police. According to SAPS records, there are 59,000 members within the rank, only in the rank of an inspector, which most of them are closer to 20 years of service. These members are yearning for promotion and are very frustrated about this bottleneck, which seems very difficult to resolve. We have proposed a different system where members can be paid more evenly when they were holding the lower rank system. Right. Many police officers in lower ranks would like to remain at the call phase doing operational duties as long as they were paid adequately. Some do not want to become commanders, but they only become commanders because they want rank and money. We will urge this committee to consider this proposal because we are certain that it will address the problem of promotion. Honorable Chairperson, there is a trend in the SAPS currently where many vacant posts are advertised externally and filled by external incumbents. I brought today a clip from the newspaper. It's full. There's only one section within the police, which is, I think it's CIG. Here it starts from the clerk, sergeants, inspectors, captains, and upwards. And this caused a lot of unhappiness amongst our members because they feel this is denying them the right to fill in those positions. Because this system of going outside, anybody can get that position, they stand equal, but our members have been sitting there loyal and waiting for this chance to be promoted. This phenomenon is being used within the police. People with no specialized skills are employed through this process, e.g. clerks, secretaries, sergeant, inspectors, and so on. This, Honorable Chair, opens the door to patronage type of employment and closes down the opportunity for those who are loyal to the service not to progress promotionally. Hence, this backlog in an inspector to captain rank. We are saying this practice should stop. Whilst I would also like to add, Honorable Chairperson, we as the organization, we are not against this. The employment of people with specialized skills within the service. We're not saying that should stop, but it must only for that particular purpose. You don't take skills that you have within the service and go and force them outside. That is killing the morale of those members that are inside. The many members in the Directorate of Specialized Cases who have left the SAPS as inspectors and captains today holds very senior positions, but there's this new thing. If you want promotion and stuff, you go and work for government, and you come back, and when you come back, they are willing to consider you at a higher rank. But if you are within here, you can have whatever skills. There is that policy that says you cannot skip rank. If I was a constable, having an LLB or whatever rank, for me to move, I must move within the rank. But if I'm coming from outside, I can jump whatever number of ranks, and that is making our members unhappy. And I think it's going against the spirit that our police members must equip themselves and educate themselves but with that, there's nothing coming. Okay, our view is that police officers do not need to leave SAPS in order to come back and occupy higher rents. We will continue to raise this issue because failure to resolve it undermines the efforts by government to address crime levels. We are not casting any doubt on our direct rate of specialized cases because we have campaigned to have them in the police. While we recognize their critical importance of specialized units and expertise they bring in addressing complex crime, we hope that the issue affecting ordinary police officers will continue to receive adequate attention. In our previous submission, we raised the tendency to over-concentrate resources in specialized units to detriment of station level. I think this was also raised previously by the previous speaker to say we need to cut the balance between the specialized units and the normal station. We hope that this temptation to serve a neoliberal agenda is avoided. Police stations are critical in the fight against crime and in creating a positive image for the entire police service. Hence, a balance must always be created in the budget between specialized units as well as police station level. The Soccer World Cup would like to reiterate our gratitude, excitement of the opportunity provided by FIFA to host the World Cup in 2 months. The World Cup is by far the biggest sporting event, even bigger than the Olympics. It is logically that extra measures are put in place to ensure that South Africans as well as our visitors are safe before, during, and after the event. Once again, our members will be called upon to secure this event and make sure that crime is prevented during and after the tournament. Our men and women are ready to make sacrifices like many South African volunteers to ensure that we hold a very successful World Cup completely free from crime and other disturbances. They are aware of the scope and magnitude of the event. It's massive and it's also rewarding financially. It is an amazing opportunity and South Africa is unlikely to host this event again in our lifetime. I would like to assure this committee on behalf of our members that we are once again ready to provide quality service to our people and those visiting the country. Our members are ready to answer the national call. Unlike ordinary South Africans, police officers will not have the opportunity to benefit from this tournament. Hence, we are proposing that our members be properly incentivized for the sacrifices they will make, given the million of rand that this tournament will bring to the country. We believe that it will only be fair to provide incentives to our members so that they do not engage in any other business that they may take them away from their responsibilities. We are happy with the negotiations that we have initiated and we hope that the budget will cater for that. For that, I mean, we placed a point in the first DC with our sister unions here to say management must come out straight to say how we're going to deal with the deployment and the remuneration of the police. We are avoiding a situation where I think in the last election, I think 2 months or 1 month or 2 months before the election, management came with a position that was decreasing the normal overtime paid by the police, paying each and every police officer that is employed in the Confederation Cup and the elections an amount of 560. Whatever rank, whatever hours you work, and that made most of our members unhappy. And that almost led to a difficult situation where police refused to go and man polling stations and this event. We had to come in and intervene and tell our members. Therefore, in this time, we are happy that as Labour, we place this point in the management to make sure that that kind of a situation is not repeated. We're hoping that we will get the support of this committee. The World Cup is not a national event, but an international event. We are again bringing the issue of overtime before the committee, which I've mentioned. I've mentioned the issue of the 560 that we are not happy about, but it's handled. I think currently at the arbitration level, where we challenge them. But we want this matter to be finalized as soon as possible. Because we told our members to hang on, that we, because we are dealing with this, but we are afraid, come the 2010, if that matter is not been resolved and management come with other tactics to try and save money and take away what the members have, it's going to create a problem. So we would like the assistance of the committee dealing with this one. On format, the South African Police Union has expressed on a number of platforms its complete disapproval to the manner in which the issue of medical aid for police officials is managed. The police medical aid was created exclusively for police officials and their dependents, and the idea was to ensure that police officials have access to quality health care services. This initiative was well supported by SAPO and other police unions. And in 1999, we signed an agreement with the employer, SAPS. At the launch, unions formed part of the board of trustees as representatives of their members. A lot of change with this. Currently, we're sitting with a situation where the board of trustees, in trying to shorten the whole story, because I've put it in detail here, Chairperson, are sitting with a situation where formed at the board of trustees, where unions are not represented as unions, or they have taken a decision to increase the contribution of members to an extent where they cannot cope. We engaged the management on this point, and they intervened. Really, it was reversed. I think in December, January, the members were given their money that was deducted by format, and it came to. In fact, the National Commissioner mentioned in our meeting that what they picked up is that they found that management was not keeping up with their own contribution, and this led now to the pressure of Holmes, where they decided that the best way is to increase the contribution of members. That was reversed, and we were all happy. It only happened with 1 month, and that, again, the members had to pay the money that was given to them, and the same happened. There is that big thing that is happening. As I often hear, asking directions from police officers, this was the main thing that officers, when they heard we are coming here, they said we must raise. Without reading through, I'll go to the last paragraph. We believe that the original idea why Polnet had to be created has long been lost and forgotten, and our members did not contribute any money when the scheme was launched. But today, if we contribute more than the normal other medical aid institution. And the thing is that, Chairperson, is that our members are saying we are not allowed to choose what medical aid we belong to. We are forced to belong in this medical aid. Mm-hmm. But in terms of the contribution, they charge such huge amount. That is the biggest thing. If it was free and we could choose where we want to go, we would say well and fine. I think I'll go to internal disciplinary mechanisms, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, would like to say from the onset that would join those that would like to work towards creating a professional and disciplined police service. We support democratic and transparent mechanisms and systems which seek to deal with lack of discipline. We'd like to support mechanisms to strengthen our disciplinary mechanisms so that our members receive a fair and a quick decision. We think that it's out of sync with the international trends and democratic norms to deny police officers the right to fair and speedy disciplinary process. We have many members whose cases have not been finalized for many months. Others go up until 2 years. People suspended without any benefit. And that, to us, is unacceptable, Chairperson. Many of these members have been suspended without pay, which is unfortunate, because this practice is likely to push these trained people straight into the hands of criminals. In terms of police corruption, we would like to once again restate our position with regard to creating a unit within the police to deal with the problem of corruption. We think that the decision which was taken in 2002 to disband that corruption unit in the police was completely misinformed. Our members have opportunities to engage in corruption more than other public service workers. Hence our call to create a specialized unit to receive and investigate these complaints regarding police corruption. Garnishing of police officers. In our previous submission, we raised the issue of garnishing of our members who have defaulted with creditors. While police officers are not above our laws, we believe they need to be treated with dignity and within the bounds of the law. We have reason to believe that the SAPS management is not complying with the legislation relating to garnishing of and blacklisting of members who are defaulting on their obligations to service their creditors. Members are garnished to a point where they do not receive any salary at the end of the month. We continue to receive many complaints from our members, of some which no longer receive any salary because of garnish orders. We submit that the legal opinion that we are receiving suggests this practice is illegal. By the employer, we consider the issue serious as it has implications in fighting corruption and ill-discipline amongst our members. It's difficult for our members who have no money to concentrate on providing police service where they have opportunities to create other means in getting some income. The issue of resources, Honorable Chairperson, there's a long list, but we only mentioned few. I think the other people who presented here today, they mentioned few, the issue of the station that are in very bad shape. From here, again, I'll mention I went to the police, I think it's the judiciary room. It's in a very bad state. The floors, the tiles, they've moved up. And, you know, when you look there, those are not professionals who are supposed to work in that kind of environment. Really would like to urge in this budget vote that those things are taken care into. Last night, I received a call from a member in, I think, in Melmont. One of the things they said, please look at our police station. The conditions we are working under, it's very bad, it's appalling. But we only in our presentation mentioned the issue of transport, which we say is one of the biggest problems that leads to the police not being able to react on time in the complaints, and especially detectives. One of the biggest things is that the rate prosecution, in fact, the rate that the success in the cases is very low. And our belief is that it's caused by the lack of resources within the detective services, where one detective will have to share a vehicle with other five colleagues. And you know, you must go out, especially after hours, to go and interview witnesses, interview complainants and whatever. But if you're sharing one car, that makes it very difficult. And again, the issue of training, especially for detective services, where you find a detective carrying about 200 dockets, they have never received any formal detective training. Mm-hmm. And these cases must go to court, and in court, the cases are thrown out, and you see now the management is hiring professional lawyers to come and take statements, and I don't believe that is the case. That is going to solve our problem, because that's not the problem. It's just the time that people are given. If you are given 200 dockets, and on a Friday you must take these dockets to your commander for inspection, I don't think you do justice to those dockets. So I will stress again, training of our people and more resources for these services. Then I'll move to legal services with your permission, Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson. Sub legal services is dysfunctional. Most matters between labor and subs are outsourced to senior counsel. Here, shop steward, ordinary shop steward, they go and stand side by side with senior counsel. For us, that's a waste of money. Because there are advocates within SAPS who can stand against the shop steward on a matter, disciplinary matter, arbitration matter. Why go to senior counsels outside? We've got one example, one case where we won a case against the SAPS about the pilot. It was about 6.6 million rand. And this case was done by Advocate Brainer's firm, which is a senior counsel. SAPS lost the case against us. They went to the same legal firm to ask for an opinion. Can we appeal against this thing for a review? It's obvious. If I lost, I gave them an opinion to say, take the unions on this matter. I'll give you the same opinion. And the same legal firm is given the job to do the appeal. To us, it's a waste of money. It just proves what we are saying. They have employed advocates and lawyers, but they are not using them. So when the time for the okay, I will not go to repeat the case, but that is what we are trying to say. That department is dysfunctional within it. There's no work for it. They are wasting a lot of money in going outside lawyers. In conclusion, Chairperson, would like to thank the Chairperson for inviting us to participate in this important forum. We hope that the committee will consider seriously the issues that we have raised in our submission. Also hope we can continue to rely on the guidance of this committee to continue to work towards creating a better police service for our members and our country. We're also encouraged by the leadership of the National Commissioner, who has been keen to consult and engage us and take us on board on every decision. We hope you will continue to create the platform for the robust yet healthy interaction between ourselves and the staff management as we try together to deliver safety and security to our people. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Indeed, we do take your presentation seriously, and I think they also prepare us for interaction with the Department of Resources, their budget. We are going to take questions from members, and you will respond to those questions. Bob Ngoma, Honorable Mistress.
Thank you, Jefferson. We ask them for it, they will respond for it. Oh, thank you, Brother Chairperson. Chairperson, firstly, I want to ask them as trade unions that when and how are they involved in the budgeting of the department? There are stages, there are three stages. When? Because most of them, they say that we must take this presentation seriously. Now, I want to ask them, when are they involved? That's the first thing. The second thing is that how do they treat their members who are corrupt and who have been identified as corrupt officials? What do they do if they find them through their processes of trade unions and so on, and if they are going there and so on? And the last question, Chairperson, I hear Sapo saying that the legal system is not working. Legal services is not working. What are they proposing? What is their proposal on the matter? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair President. Listening to the program presentation, I made a statement that about the advantages of decentralization of work and authority. Now, having stated, raised the issue of decentralization, my first question based on that is whether they are in support of the specialized units such as the child protection unit, because we know everybody was not happy about that, because when they talk about taking specialized skills to the police station, are they in support of specialized units that will not necessarily be in every police station? And also, my question is on the issue of call centers. With call centers, obviously, the calls are not going directly to the police station. I'm still looking at the issue of decentralization. Is it an advantage to, in your opinion, to for calls to go to a center and then be redirected to a specific area, or you think that if they go directly to a police station, as it happened in the past, and have better responses? And my next question has to do with youth development and training in policing. Now, this training that you are proposing should take place at station level, or where should it take place? And secondly, how should what would you recommend as the criteria for selecting the youth that should be part of this development in policy? And lastly, on the issue of reserving, I think SAPU sounded like they're not very happy that unemployed youth are used in as a reserve. Would SAPU then not support the proposal by COPCU that youth must be trained in policing? And when we look at these youth that have to be trained in policing, obviously I ask whether at what level should it happen? And after this training, that I'm going back now to COPCU, should they be used as reservists or should they be absorbed in the police?
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question to COPCU is, in terms of the training that your members receive, are you satisfied that it's meeting your expectations? To SAPU about the exorbitant contributions to your medical aid, what is your suggestion? What you suggest should be done? Thank you.
Thank you. Another one.
Thank you. I'm agreeing with a great deal of what you've had to say in the SAPU document, but I have a concern about the Garnishee orders. Are you suggesting here that SAP members who buy on the credit and can't pay must just be left not to pay back? I can't see how you imagine this working. I know I've worked in many places where the, in fact members of Parliament have Garnishee orders. It's all over. I don't know what the law says in relation to how much of one's salary may be taken by the creditors, but surely you should be advising your members to be more fiscally responsible. I don't know that I could ever accept that SAPS members could get away with simply buying and not paying back. I think that would actually say that we're allowing them to be above the law, although that's actually how you started, but in fact that's what you say. You say they mustn't be above the law, but you're probably saying they must be. So I think please clarify.
Thank
you, Chairperson. Let me thank SAPU and COPCU for their presentation. The union movement
work with numbers. I'm very happy to know that couple membership is 70,000. I would love to know what is the membership of POC in this regard so that I can check the balance of what, whether you are in majority or not. But I want to believe that you are in majority, therefore your voice must be listened to. I'm very, very much concerned that 56,000 personnel have been there for almost 20 years. This is very unacceptable. Still the department continues to advertise posts outside. Surely, if these people, the advertisements are just internal, these people will qualify for this external advertisement. So this is a receipt for dissatisfaction and low morale. This needs an urgent attention of this government. I agree. I also agree that the work done at the head station, a proposal by that a flatter organogram would benefit the police in this country is very reasonable. We need to look into how do we make that possible. Lastly, Chairperson, Oakwood is talking about funding the community safety column. Our recent visit into Mission Plain, one community person was gunned down, and it's so pathetic. These people, they need funding so that at least they can have a police vest. You know, when they do this important work for the community. Thank you,
Chairman. And Chief,
Honorable Chief, Thank you. I just have two issues. Just on that, on the Ghana Seawater story, I mean, I don't know if you perhaps can advise your members as well, that there is a lot of remedies available now in terms of the National Credit Act and debt counseling and that kind of stuff. And they can also help to ensure that people's debts are not taking their entire salary. So maybe you can also, from your side, help with that issue. I like your idea of corruption, but my concern is, I mean, no, I don't like your idea of corruption. I like your idea of combating corruption.
Well, I was worried about it.
But my concern is, you know, we'll have the problem is coming from within SAS. Now, if we're going to establish a unit within SAS, then how are we going to know which members are involved in the corruption in the first place, and whether they're in fact part of the same unit?
Sure.
So I think maybe we need to reconsider that one and see if we can come up with some other suggestions, because I fully agree there is corruption that needs to be talked about.
Yeah. I'd like to thank the
Labour movement for the presentation. One of my questions has been covered by Honorable Stefan with regard to the garnishing of the concern raised in this presentation, that the garnishing of members, that you, the relationship that you have with the NCR that has been covered regarding debt and credit accounts, so that one has been covered. You mentioned in your presentation that this is related directed to SAPO, because you mentioned there that instead of your leadership serving in the board of trustees of Colnet, then only the membership that gets appointed in the board. What I'd like to find out is, these members are not their members, are they not your members, are they not SAPO members? The people that serve in the board of police medical aid scheme, aren't they your members? Because if they are your members, then I don't see the reason why then is SAPO not content or happy with them being there, because still they would get the information. So I'd like to get the rationale behind the concern.
Thank you very much for the question. As I said, you are a mission to both POPCO and staff. In your own view, do you think that the budget, this year's budget, talks to the department's priorities? Another question that I will ask both the union staff and POPCO. How often do you meet with the national management, as I think you are here representing national leadership of the two unions? Is there a schedule of meetings between yourself and the management? I'm asking these questions because some of the issues that are here, I think they could have been dealt with at that level, once we take a note of all of them is raised. POPCO, you are saying on page 2, but also ascertain that our members who are employed by the department are indeed fulfilling their duties to ensure that the mandate bestowed to them is fulfilled. How are you doing that? How are you doing it? Because sometimes we are made to believe that you are there only to represent your members, even when they do extremely wrong things, and you represent them. How are you doing it? You also have said on page 7 there should be a smooth handing over of work from the police to justice and corrections without any blockages. And you said about the privatization of services discharged by forensic science laboratories that was envisaged. Can you elaborate on this one? What do you mean by this one? One other issue you have suggested is the involvement of South African youth in massive program of community policing and safety. And you are suggesting that a stipend must be paid by government. My question will be, how do you think the department will control that? Because you have about 40% of youth, maybe, that is in the majority not employed. And when they all come to say we are more than willing to fight crime and to get the stipend, how is the department going to control it? What do you think will be the criteria so that we know as to who is taken, if we're to take this matter up with the department as a portfolio client. SAPO, I think the question I had, I also had already covered by Ms. Angie on the well trained, because I also wanted to know your view on that one. I think she's covered me on that one. On the issue of reserves raised by SAPO, what is your view with regards to the issues that they are raising? The fact that they want to be trained as police without them being screened, even if they have criminal records, they still want to be part of SAPO. What is your view? Probably one will also be interested to hear the views of POPCO as well.
you also raised issues regarding under seven restructuring of staff reshuffling. We are concerned that when our members are constantly reshuffled. My question is in as far as you are concerned, is there a clear transfer policy in the Department of Police, and is it adhered to? Is it being implemented and adhered to by the management? If not, what are the issues? On also issues of promotion, I want to believe that surely there must be an agreement between the department and unions on this one. Is there a policy on that one? Is it working? Is it adhered to? And what is your role in as far as that is concerned? I think those are the questions that I have. Other questions I think will be relevant to us from the department. We have taken note of some of the things that you have raised in your documents, which we think they form part of the questions that the department will have to respond. Please, Mr. Chair, Pop Crew.
Involvement in the budget. The only time we are involved in saying 1, 2, 3 with regard to the budget is when we are sitting in this committee and saying that's the end part of it. Obviously, the structure, the legislative process, it doesn't squeeze us anywhere within the budget process, other than making or making comments in this committee. So that's the short and the long and short of this aspect. We would most likely and more interestingly to be part of the initial processes where we can make input. Even before the finalization and adoption of the budget. But the processes obviously they kick us out. So we pin our hopes to this committee, Reverend Mishra, that this committee will be our shop steward, vibrantly so. Okay, members who are corrupt and how do we treat them? I normally hear the parliamentarians, so when they hit one another in parliament, say presumption of innocence until proven otherwise. Now, any allegation put to a member, it needs to first be proved whether or not it's wrong or right. And there are processes within the department which deals with that. Now, our coming to represent any member who is within our forum is that if there is any allegation of a misconduct, there is a process that must be dealt with. That problem or the misconduct must be dealt with, which calls for a representation, meaning the member, whether he killed a person, is entitled to representation. Now, our coming is that the member must be treated fairly. Even if he's found guilty, but the processes must be followed to the end. And we are not encouraging corruption. In fact, we condemn it to the bitter end of corruption. From the decentralization of authority, our support of the child protection services. Now, let's talk about the practicalities. We know the approach by the department, the minister, is that they must come back at the provincial level. Our take is that
as we have indicated in our presentation, is that they must be at the provincial level. We fully support those specialized skills or those units, but you are saying they must be at the stations where issues, where things happen. Now, the practicality that we're talking about is that take a province, as big as Western Cape, geographically, which is so big, Southern Cape, for that matter, where from the province or from one area to the province, the province is in Kimberley, in the Southern Cape, you've got a place. Springbok, 1,000 kilometers. Now there's a complaint in Springbok. This skill or this unit is in Kimberley. Before he comes to the scene, a lot has happened. Now they say if they are decent, they are happening where they are placed where the where things happen. With their skills, they can be able to attend to the problems immediately. That's what we are saying. But we know that we are the ministers, but a different view. And we are hell-bent to our position. And we are convinced that in that way, it will work quite effectively. Call centers, the same. I don't think the centralized call center is effective. Not effective, and I think there are a lot of complaints about it. Sometimes it's not working at all, sometimes, or it takes a lot of time. Now, if it's directly to the institutions where cases have to be reported to, by all means, all the better. Youth development, where should it take place? The training. The OLO are not prescriptive. In this regard, we are more than well. We in terms of if this is something that to be considered, obviously, and we want to roll input. In fact, we'll look at all the possibilities and make some input into the formulation of such, whether the same the qualities, the current qualities, or to design a different component of dealing with this. We'll make some input. The age group, as well, look at obviously the policies, the employment, health, the issues of the youth. That's something that, but the youth obviously is starting from school living or 18 years and above. So the cutoff is not necessarily looked at. In terms of up to what age, but as a contribution to the fight of the fighting crime, we are seeing this is an option that can be of use within the fight. Whether or not they should be reservists or full time afterwards when they are trained, in fact, reservists, we are seeing that component must be scratched. Actually, current businesses, they should be not all of them. I don't think all of them. See, criteria must be set, but they must be taken within the department. How their deployment? I hope that the noting of head does not say
shaking.
Believe me, shaking. The shaking of head. We are saying. The reservists must be incorporated into the police. These are the resources that they've been utilized by the police for quite some time. They have some experience. Agreeing with the minister, have relaxed some of the criteria in terms of the hurdles which have been. Which are there to, we are saying it's not enough. We are more than prepared, in fact, to engage further on this matter, to say the incorporation of. In fact, there's no need for reservists.
to us, it's a scarce labor that is utilized by the service. So there's no need for such kind of a component.
Can I just ask that? Can I just make a are you saying they should not be screened? Whether
no, no, no.
The person has a criminal record, it doesn't matter.
No, no, that's not what you're saying. You're saying a criteria should be developed. You're saying the minister, yeah, we know, there has been some relaxation. We're saying it's not enough. There are inputs that we have. Screening, by all means, that's the first key, the first process to take. We must be screened to the fullest. But we are saying, so we are not calling for that one.
I want just to add, you know, the police themselves have violated the very criteria they're supposed to use in employing air service. One, you must be employed. But currently, 90% is unemployed people. That's where there's a problem. Because you're supposed to have been employed, then you only work 2 hours a week. That's a policy. So it has been violated. But obviously, also, you can't be air service if you are a criminal case. That's a criteria. And if you are working inside, then you have got a case, you are fired like any normal police person. So the point of his calling now, absorb these people who are clean, who are currently clean as reservists. Why don't you absorb them? Because it happened in the past. The chief constables were absorbed. There's nothing new here. The police guards here, guarding yourself, were also absorbed. So we're not talking something from the air. We are from the workplace, we understand, we are clear on what we are saying. Thank you.
I follow up. I mean, there's one thing saying that some people must be absorbed, and it's another thing entirely to say there shouldn't be any more reserves. Because there are many people in many communities who are employed people who want to actually contribute to helping stop crime in their areas. And to just say, sorry, there mustn't be reservists, I mean, the whole point, I think your point is right. Maybe the application of the policy hasn't been done properly. So that doesn't mean it's a reservist fault, it's a police's fault. So if they apply this policy properly, then actually reservists are supposed to be volunteer people who want to help out in the community. And I think you have to be very careful about trying to stop the whole reservist thing because of one issue.
Sure. In fact, I thought that
we
have the reservists, like myself, who after we will go and render my service. But then you now have reservists who are unemployed and looking for employment, and they come as reservists. And I want to believe that is where the problem is. And I think that is what we need to focus our discussion on.
Exactly.
Otherwise, maybe just to take a blanket decision that do away.
No.
I'm not sure whether that. I was just checking whether Pope Crew is saying no, we don't want Cindy Chikunga after work coming to assist. I'm just asking that question. I'm just asking that question. But also I just want to clarify, we definitely will ask follow up questions because we want to be clear on what you are saying, so that if we must ask the department, we must be knowing exactly what you are saying, and we must be asking questions based on what you said, not on what we think you said.
So, okay. On this matter, we can engage further, but our official position is that you don't need this company of services. And therefore, we are open for engagement. And convince you, all of you. You don't need to know.
Okay, I like your standard.
May I proceed? Training of members, is it sufficient? Well, I think we have said in our presentation that we indeed and we support, obviously, the reskilling. The current the police personnel, the reskilling, part of it is fully support the approach that the commissioner, the reskilling, we support. Now,
whether or not it's sufficient, maybe the syllabus is what needs to be checked, what needs to be looked at. I think up until when 5 years ago, when it was realized that the syllabus in Malyosko was saying, what is a terrorist? The definition of a terrorist. Any member of the African National Congress, Pan-African Congress, Pan-African Congress, and ASAPO, all those organizations. That's when it was found. We still have this kind of the syllabus and changed immediately. So, that's an example. You might need even the entire curriculum might need to be revised. The length is something else that should be revised, but the curriculum, vis-à-vis the current challenges of technology and all sorts of organized crime, you might need to review the curriculum that is used in terms of training. So the membership of POCRU, we've got a total of 100,000 members in the both combined. All the rest, I think, most will comment. We'll just comment on the Board of Trustees. Well, it's not directed to us, but we'll just make a comment on the Board of Trustees of Parliament. We take it from the Medical Schemes Act, which says 50% of the Board of Trustees must be members, the owners. Now the trend in terms of appointment of trustees now, in terms of the current rules, it is a standing position that the commissioner will appoint half of the no contest about it, appoint half of the trustees. Now the rest will be contested in the amongst themselves. So the point of understanding to okay, we're not really speaking on the supposed behalf, but that it's an involvement initially through the agreement that was signed in 1999. It included labor as part of who were appointing, automatically appointing one or two to sit there. Now, which could have obviously resolved some of the issues, and they have been resolved, taking the background of Parliament way. The AGM used to be complete chaos. So, with the involvement of labor and engagement with management, there has been some cohesion in dealing with it. Though we are, and we engaged and we are still engaging on that aspect in terms of the proposals and options as an organization. Chair, the 2010 budget, whether or not it's talking to the priorities, it's difficult to say yay or nay, in the sense that, on preparations of this presentation, we struggled to get the budget itself. Now, we can't boldly say it is addressing the priority areas, and we would definitely like the budget to address the priority areas. Meetings with management, how often? We normally set, there are different meetings or different engagements. There are those within collective bargaining which are set, let's say, the year planner, year planner for the whole year in terms of collective bargaining, where all parties are. Now, there are bilateral engagements, multilateral engagements, which will obviously depend on the availability of party. Each party requesting the other party to say, can we engage? So it's that periodical and it's occasional when there are instances one party would like to address with the other party or with other parties in the multilateral form. I hope it responds to the question. Encouraging members to do their duties indeed. We do. I think you have responded to this one on the issue of the how do you treat members who are corrupt. Now, smooth handing over the privatization. Chair, the previous year, 2008, there has been this bill which was towards the closure of or the dissolved parliament in preparation for the election following year. The bill was rushed. December 10th, it must be passed. In fact, if we were not there, the bill would have been an act by now. The previous committee, the members of the previous committee will know, because there was a special committee that was established just to look into that bill. And now it was crafted in such a manner that the majority of services in forensic science laboratory are outsourced. It would have been law that they would be outsourced or privatized. Now we exposed that. Doing of things. And I think it's what is now currently the committee is dealing with, or Parliament is dealing with, towards finalization. Now, there were provisions there which were couched or drafted in such a manner that it makes it possible. With and already in those in forensic science laboratories, we're earmarking or seeing themselves jumping the ship now to train the private entities which are already involved, and to milk the stuff, billions of money. That's what we're talking about here, Chair. The transfer policy, it is there, yes, indeed.
Thank you, Chairperson.
With your microphone.
Thank you very much. On the first question, I'll just touch what my colleague has started, the involvement of unions in the budgetary systems or stages. I'll also concur with him, it's not to our satisfaction. I think as a curious person, I've seen the budget speech, but what you see on paper is not the same when you sit down and exchange and you understand the rationale behind. So we as a union, we are totally not happy because some of the things that we don't understand where they're coming from. On the how do we treat our corrupt members, without repeating, we also believe in the in the principle of law where the members receive the necessary assistance when they are involved in this. So we represent our members without any encouragement in all the forums or tribunals where they are supposed to go and face the charges. And our duty there is to ensure that they finish in the process. And what we also do, we proactively talk to our members to cease from being involved in this corrupt activity. Now, in the function that we had in Zimbabwe, for example, we stood there in front of the minister, national commissioner, and the stadium was full. We asked our members to cease from involving themselves in this. So from time to time, where we get a group of members, we workshop, we talk with our members. But our involvement, Chairperson, regarding the corruption. Then the dysfunctional of the legal department within the SAPS, what do we think should happen? There are only two things, Chairperson. Because we feel that the department within staff is not carrying the mandate that they are supposed to. Look at the litigation, the arbitration, and all the legal methods of SAPS. because we feel that if they outsource this function, why should they be there? The only two things, dissolve them or they must stick to what they were employed for. Don't waste money and go and leak a legal advice outside while you are sitting in your department with legal people. Because we see that those resources could have been used somewhere else. There was also a question on what the inputs of our comrades here, what is our view regarding the youth versus unemployment. I would say that youth must not be given opportunities to be rebellious. I think it was mentioned in this. Our view regarding the reservists is that we must stick to the basics. Because what the reservist component was started for is no more the case now. There is a huge problem of unemployment in the country. And the people go there, they go and volunteer with the hope of getting a job. And now you are not addressing what you are supposed to address. So address on the side, the government must address unemployment, because this problem of unemployment has shifted now to this department. Where you call now our comrades saying that Christ deserves it, which we think should not be the case, but address unemployment with whatever projects that the government has, but on the side, stick to the basics, where you take people that are employed, people that understand that we are here for voluntary service. I don't work the old man under pretense of voluntarism, and then the next thing I demand salary. And the screening, we are very clear, we like the fact that the government is giving the reservists an opportunity to be employed. We are saying, stick to the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Stick to the rules. If I was an officer, I had to go for my fingerprints, I had to be vetted, I had to go through those things. Let them go through the same thing, because once they're inside, you know, we spoke about corruption now. Once they're inside, in the eyes of the public, there's no difference between a reservist and a police, or you were a reservist before. So we understand the rules were dropped a bit on you, so we should not be that, we should not be harsh. So let the rules be the same. But SAPU's view on this, Jefferson. So we are not saying youth must be trained on policing with the idea for them to understand better and for them to ask for now on the question employment versus the training of youth on policing. They must not be trained with the view that we want to use you as a service. It should be that we want the youth to know more about policing and how what crime is and whatever and all those things. And if some of them end up in the police, it will be a bonus for us. The issue of medical aid, what do we propose as staff, what must happen? I think I will link these two, because there was also a question about the composition. We are unhappy about the composition and about the high contribution of members. One, we had a meeting, as I explained, with the management, where we put the unhappiness of the members to the management. National Commission said, no, I understand. Before you came here, we did some investigation on the matter. We agreed that we didn't keep up with our own contribution, and this is one of the reasons we are at this. That is what led the management writing a letter to Parliament that left that thing, and we were all happy. So what should happen? Management must contribute what they are supposed to contribute, so that the members, we understand in terms of the inflation, they must be increases, but it must not be, we must not carry the management. This was taken to Tibet this year as well, where we engaged with management and they said, if you want us to keep up to date with what we're supposed, then we'll be bankrupt as the department. We can't keep up to date. But what you are saying in SAPU, that cannot be carried by the members. And on the composition, what do we think should happen in the composition? Those members, are they not our members? It's another thing when they are our members, but they don't speak on behalf.
of the members, because the Act is very clear. They must be members of the service, but when they are there, they don't carry any mandate from whatever, from the members. They don't hold meetings first and say, there's going to be increases, and what are you saying, should we go or against? What we are saying, the composition should be as from at the beginning, labor and management. Like the management is granted an opportunity to sit there, as labor we should also be granted an opportunity, because we take mandate directly from the members. It's happening with the GEPF. I'm sitting in the board of GEPF. Labor is represented there.
What's
the government employees pension fund. Oh. Do I continue, Madam? Okay. Thank you. On the garnishing order,
yes.
Okay, we're not saying police are passed the law. The law is very clear on how this should happen. Saying, one, through the order of the court, and secondly, with the consent of the member. If might not be 100%, but those are the two basics that we understand. But for members, to just see garnish orders in their salaries and whatever, we are saying the stuff is not right. Sit down, call the member, let's explain to the member the consequences, and you involve yourself in this, therefore you've got an obligation and this and all those things. Well, the member must not just see these deductions in their salaries, and you must consider that the member must also, I know if I go to Elements, I can sit down and say, can I please pay 50 rand? This is what I can afford and refresh the timing. But if deduction just takes place, you don't have that opportunity to engage. We are not saying they should not, they must be above the law.
I just want to follow up on that. The garnishee order cannot be granted by a court unless they first give a notice to the person. And what happens very often in practice is people ignore the notices and think that nothing's going to happen. So perhaps you need to also just tell your members that if they get notice, they mustn't just ignore it. Because if they go to court, they can then present their financial situation to the court. And then the court has to take it into account. But if they don't know it, they can't do it. So I think a lot of the time it's just people think, well, I couldn't be bothered, and they just ignore it, and that's when they then finally
come
to
the union.
Yeah.
No, thanks for the advice.
One point, thanks, Jefferson. I'd like to find out who actually is second these members to this court. And what criteria are being used, or what criteria is being used to second or nominate this for the central of and I'm sitting here thinking of being a union representative, representative of the union, but not belonging to, I'm a first member, but I don't belong to Colnet for various reasons. Maybe my partner has a medical kit with better benefits. I therefore belong to that medical aid kit. And I'm in the leadership of those, and I'm not a member, because it says here members must be drawn from the membership. Maybe I don't understand whether it's the membership of staff or the membership of
appointment.
That's what I have to
say. Thank you, Chairperson. The membership, it means that people must be members of appointment, not of union. Now, the process is that they will have annual AGMs where members do nominations and they elect whoever they want. We are not against that system, but what we are saying, that system, these people don't account to anybody. The moment they get into the system, into the board of government, they don't have to account to anybody. We are the first people when there are problems. I'm also a police officer, but I got to know about these deductions through the calls of the members. And the members saying, you are our representative. You are supposed to do something for us, but yet we are not sitting there, because I think I think if I'm not mistaken, I'm speaking under correction. If I receive a vote of 500 or 700, I can sit at the board of Parliament. What we are saying, that system is not working because those people don't account to anybody. We are sitting here with problems as the representatives of these members, but we can't take them up. We can only go to management, and management will say, we cannot interfere with the businesses of Parliament. Parliament is a separate entity.
No, I absolutely agree with Fab that the democratic process must be respected. Because even yourself here, you come through party to sit here. The party mobilizes people to vote for you. So in Parliament, it's opposite. Individually, they by luck, they get voted in. Obviously, that even if they are our members, we cannot hold them accountable. That's an issue here. While the National Commissioner has got power to appoint half of the board. Obviously, he appoints senior people who can who cannot have problems with this huge increase, you know, because they're getting 50,000 plus, while cost of like getting 3,000 on the bottom. That's what we're seeing. Thanks.
Thanks. Can I attend to other questions, Chairperson? I think I've addressed the composition of Parliament, how do we want to see it, and what is it currently. Do you think the budget talks to the priorities? I think we've answered where we said we are not involved in the budget in part of it. Now, you can't take the budget and look at the priority and see whether it is addressing or not. We are having difficulty in answering that question. Meetings are the same as my colleague has mentioned here. We have the backing council where the party sits and will raise backing issues. Sometimes we meet with the national management where we raise specific issues like the format we do have. And now we have recently in January had a meeting with the national commissioner where we agreed that we should have meetings on quarterly basis, but that should not stop us meeting him if they are urgent matters. So we are quite satisfied currently with the current management that whenever we need to see them, we can meet with them. But it does not mean all the points that we are bringing to him or to his management will be addressed. That is why we use all the forums that are available to us to raise all these issues. Reservists, I think we've said what the position of SACO is regarding the reservists. Reshuffling, there is a policy. Chairperson asked, is there a transfer policy? It is. There is a transfer policy. But we don't feel it's being adhered to at all times. To some extent, it's being adhered to, but at some times, this same policy is being used as a punitive measure. But the policy is very clear. It must never be used as a punitive measure against the member. But at times it does happen. We had cases, but I didn't bring specific cases here. But the policy is the Chairperson. Is there a policy on promotion? There is a policy on promotion, Chairperson, which we feel is not working, not addressing the problems that we are sitting with, the 59,000 members that are in one rank for quite a long time. In our last meeting with the National Commissioner, one of the things that when we raised the same issue of the 59,000, he gave us this number. We went there with 54,000. We didn't update. He said, actually, it's 59 now. It's up from 54. And he said, look, we are revising the promotion policy because the current one not addressing. So they are in the process. We have not seen the document that they are working on, whether it's going to address the things that we are raising or not, but they informed us that they are in the process of revising the current information policy. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah.
Yeah,
before we close, I wanted to check something with you. We've been told something by the top structure, and I want to see from your side. At the training academy and again and again over the last 2 years, I've asked
Where are the regulations in relation to fitness being overweight? I mean, I'm from KZN, and some of the cops couldn't run 2 steps without dropping dead of a heart attack. They are enormously overweight. And I said, well, hold on. Where are your regulations? If the guy's this high, how wide can he be? I don't know. There's got to be some way of working it out, your fitness levels. And they said, no, the unions wouldn't allow that. And I kind of feel they're blaming someone. Yeah, that's what I thought you'd be doing, shaking your head. I found it very curious when they said it at the time, and I thought, let me go to the horse's mouth here and ask you, if you have ever caused a fuss about them having regulations about fitness levels, about weight levels, just purely for, I mean, if an overweight person has to sprint after someone with a stolen cell phone, they'll drop dead. I mean, it's physically dangerous. And it immediately came over with you, which was the union for Bezos. So I wanted to see your reaction to that. And I'm also interested to hear if you are being at all involved in what is being announced on the TV and newspapers. I don't know, I've never heard of it in this committee, but this re-militarization of the ranking, redoing of all the ranking structures, and having to go back to the old style generals, like it's an army. Are you being involved in this? It's a whole restructuring, what are we up to, like the 12th restructuring of the stats at this stage. Are you being spoken to about this? Where are we with that position? I mean, we're presumably going to hear about it in the evening news at some stage, but it'd be quite nice if the portfolio committee actually knew what was going on.
Thank you, Chen. Thank you, Chen. Something is important that many of the employees have been suspended for a very, very long time without salary. And this, if not illegal, it's very immoral. We have already passed a judgment on a person. It's better to dismiss that person than to keep him or her for months and months without salary. Now the department needs to tell us what are they doing, because they suspend people based on wild allegations and rumors. You see, they must tell us when are they going to finalize this long outstanding problem of suspended people without salary. The second concern that I want to raise here is about the 2010 soccer world. SAPU has raised that we need to incentivize their membership, and around the corner, less than 100 days, very soon. And the committee needs to seize this opportunity, meeting the department. That matter must be finalized with urgency that it requires. These are my concerns. Thank you.
No, Jefferson, I tend to, I don't want to say differ with my colleague who has just asked the question. SAPU said, under the heading Soccer World Cup specifically, that they are aware of the scope and magnitude of this event. It's massive and also rewarding financially. That's what they say. But on the other side, on the other paragraph, they are asking that some members, we believe that it will only be fair to provide incentives to our members so that they do not. Now, I want to get it clear. You are getting a salary to
do a job and you are getting overtime for doing that job, are you still looking for incentives over those rights? That's a question that I wanted to raise before the last speaker spoke. Before we meet it, let us be clear on that. What is it? Where are we? Thank you.
And maybe the last question will be just to hear your views, to, you know, on the Bloemfontein part. One, but two, Sapu, you suggested that you should not be having Police Act officers as well as PSA Act officers. And I don't know how that is possible. Because I think if you go to school, you have the legislation related to educators, because they are educators and professionals. Then you have that which affects your cleaners, you go to hospitals, you're going to have your Nurses Act, you're going to have your Medical Act, then you're going to have your PSA Act, you know, because you can't have all of them belonging to one act, because they don't do the same function. They don't do. I'm asking because it is here, you are expecting us to take it up with the management. I don't know whether in legal terms it's possible, because if they are under SAP, it actually means then we've got to amend SAP Act, and I don't know specifically, because this is not only affecting SAP, I think it affects the whole public sector. Yeah. You go to hospitals, like I'm saying, it will be the same thing. You can't apply the Nursing Act to the cleaner, for instance, to the gardener, for instance. It's not relevant to them. They can't. I'm just asking you, yet you cannot apply the Nurses Act to the Nursing Act to the radiographer. They have their own legislation that is controlling their practice. I'm just making an example, and I just want to understand this view.
Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, there was the issue of sickness, whether we...
And each one of you have 2 minutes.
2 minutes. Okay, I'll keep it there. We've never, as SAPU, opposed the screening medically, physically, or whatsoever of members that are coming in. In our last meeting with the Police National Commissioner, we raised the fact that formats must do like Discovery is doing. Have those privileges to send our police members to Vision Active and other companies for fitness purposes. Because of time, I won't go deep there. And on the issue of militarization of involvement, it's again, I'm not here to watch the dirty linen of the department, but the discussion is very limited. The information is very limited. Where officially we got to know this was when we met with the National Commissioner and we complained about the issue of inspectors and captains. He said, don't worry, this will be addressed with the new ranking system that is coming into place. We will deal with it. And then we said, we need that document. We give input. You might say it will address, and come the end of the day, it has not addressed that. So we don't know much. We were just briefed during that discussion. I think the suspension was just a comment. 20 World Cup salaries versus incentives. Our incentives, salaries, and in fact the whole remuneration of staff members is regulated. We don't want any new thing, Honorable Chairperson. While we are raising this with the fact that we want what will be due to our members to be given to them. We expect them to work long hours, and normally in the normal circumstances they are entitled to overtime as what we have currently and what we've seen during the election. Management went and they reduced what is due to the members by giving them 560, and we raised this point saying that it should not happen. Give them what is due to them, nothing extra, Honorable Chairperson. The Bloemfontein Party, we were there. We supported, I raised it publicly that the SAPU is supported. It was the first, there were a lot of hiccups, problems, the way it was done, and like for instance, females coming from Eastern Cape expected to drive today or get into the train, be in the stadium from there, immediately go back for 2 days, assessing no shower, no facilities. There are a lot of things that could have been done better. But the idea behind the whole thing, as SAPU, we support it. And we feel that once in a while, police need that kind of an event where they will come together, not to fight or listen to instructions, where they will be just celebrating. We support that fully as SAPU, and we said that to the National Commissioner, we should prepare it properly in the next coming. PISA versus Police Act. This matter has been going on for years, and it's difficult. And we raised it as laymen, and because the biggest problem here, you find where policemen are placed in the same office with the PISAP members to do, for instance, lead, finances, whatever, administrative duties. You get a lady or a gentleman with an HR degree or diploma, sit there, but in terms of the salary, they're earning less in terms of the benefits, the clothing allowance. I'm supposed to buy my own clothing, the police officer is getting, and that is creating a problem. This was raised to start a debate as to how do we fix and work around this thing. But we understand the dynamics behind the whole thing. Thank you, sir.
Okay. 2 minutes?
Just 2 minutes.
Okay, fitness, in fact, even before the commissioner would say what he's saying now about fitness, big challenges and so on, two, three years ago, we have proposed to the management, it was a previous commissioner, that, in fact, must bring back the old compulsory sports as part of fitness. To encourage members to be fit and proper. That's the idea we fully support. I don't need to elaborate more on this. So those who are normally when, which is part of what they are that trying to bring now with the right structure, people who cannot manage the shift goalposts and say other people are safe or unions are safe, want to say. So if there's anybody, I think he can be taken to task. The remilitarization will definitely not support it. This the previous police force, which was so brutalizing people, will definitely not support that idea. If there's anything that is going to bring us into confrontation with the department, is this one. Of remilitarizing the department. Community policing, which is serve the people, be friendly to the people, not to the criminals, of course, mm-hmm. be friendly to the people that are saying that's what is happening. Incentives, or let's say address the three. Bloemfontein Party, we are looking for the next one. We are looking for the next one. We are ready. Speaking from your explanation, obviously, if you go to the staff, I think my colleague has put it nicely. You've got in the same office. This one in uniform, this one is the civilian. Public service act. In some cases, they do the same job, but different salaries. If it's within the context of what you're saying, indeed it should be that they must do the support. But now you've got the whole office, which you are saying is bloated.
full of police, of trained police officers who do not belong there. They must be on the ground. And if it's to be, it must be coined in such a way that the support service is done by the civilians, yes, it could have been understood. But now it was almost half of the staff in the staff, PSAP members, who are utilized skilled and fit. So it's a Mwabangi. Indeed, Mwabangi are police officers, by all means, that will solve the problem and the headaches and the grievances that are there.
No, thank you. Thank you very, very much for the presentation and for responding to questions. Thank you for the engagement. I want to thank the Treasury. I want to thank the Auditor General Office. I want to thank the SAPS Union for this important engagement with us. Indeed, we're going back to prepare questions, so that we can engage the department effectively and efficiently, asking questions based on what is expected there, but of course on what is on the EMA. We will ask, I can promise you that when we engage the department, we will do it thoroughly. We really do. And this documents that are here, we're going to make use of them. Make no mistake, we're going to go back to our offices, we're going to sit down, we're going to reread them, we're going to think of what you said in the meeting here, we're going to construct questions, and we're going to hold the department accountable. This is what the Constitution mandates us to do, and we'll definitely be doing it. I really want to thank you very much for the presentation, for coming, for respecting us, and for being very eager to meet with the Portfolio Committee. We thank you very much. But I think I have to thank the members of the Portfolio Committee. I think it's important for me, after thanking everybody, never to forget to thank them for their hard work, so that they can come, you know, the following day to the meeting. They always do come, and I really must thank them for being on time. I think I was on time.
You are on time. Don't worry about that.
And thank you very much. This meeting is done.
While you're having a party, David was just off the restaurant. I thought I was on time.